want to formally welcome you guys to the number 45. Wow. I've been doing this for 45 years. 1973 was the first time that I did this as a demonstration in Princeton for the Princeton Astrological Society. And we had our 15 minutes before the main speaker would come on, and I had that slot that time. And I said, well, it's near December. Let's do the inverse chart. You know? And then I did a little trick with it. I spent 5 minutes talking about the ingress, and I said, oh, here's a real parlor trick you can do with the thing. You can do people's horoscopes in this. And I selected some people at random, and I put their suns in the solstice horoscope and directed that sun by what's called a solar arc, a direction, and made simple predictions for them for the course of the year. Well, the next year everybody came, they said, we want to see Kristen do this thing again, so they made it a regular gig in 1974, and I did everybody in the class, and there were like 40 people there, and so it went on to 11 o'clock at night. It was a marathon, and Nagus's were really, Ken and John Nagus were really into it, and from that point forward, we began to do it as a formal entity. It grew very large, that by 1980, I was giving this talk, in 1982, I was giving this talk, in northern New Jersey, western New Jersey, Princeton, South Jersey, New York City, and in Cape Cod. You remember those days, I'd come up by Rob's. And I would then be ill for about a month. Because I would do an individual reading, 10 or 15 minute reading, for every single participant at the time. And I was doing like basically 125 readings inside of a 72 to 50 hour period of time. It was morning, so I was shot. So after a while, I scaled it back and eventually dropped New Jersey altogether, you know, and never went back down to do that kind of thing again. And just sort of cranked it back up here. And for the last 12 to 15 years, it's been this group. And we do this every year. And but it is basically one of the longest running astrological events that there is. So, here's what we're going to be talking about. We're going to be talking about, let's shut off the transneps, show you how bland it really looks. I'm going to be talking about this. This is the ingress chart for Washington. That's the wrong chart. Get that chart.
Yeah.
Get rid of that thing. I don't want that piece of shit. We want this one.
Does everyone know what ingress means?
Now, an ingress is when a planet or a factor in the sky enters a new sign. Right, we call that an ingress. It's coming into the sign. Or it's ingressing into the sign. Right. And obviously the bottom of the horoscope is, for the northern hemisphere, being up here, is the beginning of winter, when the transiting sun in the sky goes into 0 degrees Capricorn. So we cast the chart for that moment. That's when the sun is as far south as it's going to be. The symbol is that it's a new seed coming out, and it talks about the coming year. We call this a static horoscope. Because it's a single chart, it's not dynamic, it's not moving. We add moving elements to it to make it unfurl, so to speak, or create movement in the horoscope. So now, if we look at this static chart with just the regular planets on it, and this is for Washington. Now, these planets are going to be in the same position all over the world. There's an instant chart. It's like freezing the solar system at once, and we're looking at it now. We're analyzing it. And the midheaven, or the highest point in the sky, can be anywhere from any place on the Earth. If I take this pointer with a little triangle on it and spin it around the sky all the way around, I'll have rotated around the Earth, essentially. So there is a high point in the sky for every place in the Earth, and there's a point where the ecliptic, or the path of the planets, rises for every place on the Earth. Now, the ancient astrologies, the astrologies of the Babylonians and the pre-Greeks, were horizon-based astrologies. In other words, they had no conception of this invisible line in the sky that the planets are dancing around. All right? They just looked at the horizon and whatever was rising on the horizon had significance. If it was a full moon and the moon was rising, everybody got scared. Oh my God, look, there's a big moon on the horizon. You know, if it was a new moon, they didn't see it. Oh, it's not so bad, but it's really dark out. You know, so but the horizon was became critical to the point where we get an evolved astrology from like in Babylon, where we see the really first good astrology arising in the world, and they take this horizon sense and they would look and they would see, well, look, there's Jupiter and it rises with the fixed star Aldebaran, you know, and here's Mars and it's rising along with the moon. This becomes our first conception of tying the planets together. And then they would look in the sky, and they would notice that the planets were dancing with one another, and they began to understand this as a language. They were talking to one another. The Venus would go and talk to Mars, and then she'd go up to talk to the moon, and bring her rays, and whatever energy she had from Mars would, you know, collectively go on the moon, much like a bee would pollinate a flower, leaving little pieces everywhere, crumbs all over the sky, you know. And when we look at this kind of a breakout, okay, we call this the pizza pie chart, right? This is 12 pieces of pie. This strong black line here is the horizon. This line here is the high point and the low point in the sky itself. The highest point that the ecliptic or the path of the planets hit. Over here is really the highest point in the sky, the non-adjacent. But this is the highest point of the ecliptic. Notice a couple of things. One, for Washington, Saturn is setting within a degree or two of arc. This is a critical thing. This means in the Washington sphere of stuff, there's problems in relationships. There's problems in partnerships. Now, I'm not going to try and be too political here or anything like it, because the truth is, everybody has already hardened their political views. There's nothing in the world that is going to change your viewpoint whatsoever as far as the way you're viewing the world at this time, because we're in a highly polarized period. This highly polarized period, unfortunately, only increases over the next decade. It may not be the same issues. The issues are extremely ephemeral, but it's going to be the same energy, right? Because we're coming to a massive change in our view of society overall. Now, like I said, this is an in-between year, and we're within a local structure. That local structure is bound by last year when we had this phenomenal Jupiter-Saturn Saturn-Sun conjunction on the cardinals, which I had never seen in my career. And we're bound on the other side by a Saturn-Pluto conjunction and Saturn's home sign of Capricorn. Right? The Saturn-Pluto conjunctions we'll talk about, there have only been three of them in our memory that we would be as living beings, 1947-48, 1980-81, 82, right in there, and this current one. It's like runs in a 40-year cycle. So we're going to talk about what kind of changes that's going to bring when that occurs next year. Now, there's another cycle, we love cycles, that goes along with all of this stuff, and it's the Jupiter-Saturn cycle, the conjunction of Jupiter and Saturn. It follows another mean cycle called the Saros cycle, which has to do with the moon's nodes, but and eclipses and whatnot. But the Jupiter-Saturn cycle is notable as well, because we're going to change over with this cycle as well. All the way up until the time of Reagan, just prior to Reagan, the Jupiter-Saturn conjunctions were in Earth signs. And they happen every 20 years. And they rule economics and the growth and expansion of businesses. It's like a clock. And all throughout history, it's one of the easiest cycles for the astrologers to work with, is this Jupiter-Saturn and the Saros cycle. Right? But it tends to group around and reoccur in the elements. So for 150 years, it was happening in Earth signs. Come Reagan, 1981, it happens in an air sign for the first time. Then it goes back by the time we get to, was it Bush or somebody, I forget, but 20 years later, Clinton, somebody, goes back into the earth signs again. Now it's going to happen again in the air signs, and it's going to stay in the air signs for the next 157 years or whatever the hell the cycle is, right? Now, the interesting thing was this cycle coincided with what was called Tecumseh's curse, which was every 20 years a president would get off in office, right, and wouldn't survive or live out their term. Starting, I think it was Harrison or somebody like that, choking on cherries, or getting pneumonia. One of them got pneumonia while speaking in front of for 2.5 hours without a coat and in sub-zero weather, but it didn't last too long in office. But either way, was this idea that we started losing presidents every 20 years. The last one was Kennedy. It would have been Reagan had it not been for modern medicine, which was able to staunch his bleeding. He would have bled out very quickly in any other era. It was the first time they were able to intervene and stop that sort of thing. And then it seems to peter out because it's changing from the earth sign to the air signs. But of course, its meaning is also changing as well. So it's not about the material manifest destiny of business, right? Because you've got to remember, from the 1830s to 1980s, you know, the world changed its business viewpoint. The whole idea of the rise of banks and lending institutions and everything else changed the entire structure of how business was conducted. And now we get to this point where it's going to change again. And we're again, when we see many cycles like this coinciding into a single era of history, we know something big is going on. Now, another one that's going to be we're going to talk about as well has to do with the mimicking of the inner planets with these outer large guys, these wise guys. And one of the workers here at Astrolabe, a guy named Doug Kellogg, he's out in Ashland, Oregon. Doug is an amazing programmer. He wrote a program called AstroStar 1 back in 1980, which was a phenomenon of its day. He calculated the chart in 4 seconds. That was unheard of at the time. But Doug wrote a series of blogs called Zeitgeist, and in it he's talking about the U.S. chart, the Sibley U.S. chart, this astrologer named Sibley, his style horoscope, and the changes that we're currently going through and have been going through. But he makes an extremely good point that I picked up on, and that is the interplay of Uranus, Pluto, and Neptune is real critical in sociological change. In particular, this is when Neptune, say, would pass in between spatially Uranus and Pluto, or Pluto would pass in between spatially between Neptune and Pluto, or Neptune would go between Uranus and Pluto. You know, in other words, one of those three would come along and make like what would look like a triangle of one form or another, but a very symmetrical structure. And we pick up on, and I printed out some of his stuff here, because this is a good background piece to really get going on. A couple of the paragraphs here that were critical. Because I agree with it from a different point of view. Last year, and the year before, and the year before that, and the year before that, I was pointing out that there's a combination called Uranus and Apollon in the Uranian system, where Uranus and Apollon rules astrology. It means the science of the future, or the implications of the science of the future. It's the revolutionary knowledge, or technology, the advent of technology. And remember, all through history, astrology was the leading technology of its day, up until the 16th century, right? The leading technology of its day. So this idea of Uranus and Apollon ruling astrology in general makes quite a bit of sense. Issue was, since the 80s, Neptune had been running at the midpoint of this Uranus and Apollon, which meant that not only did astrology go backwards, literally, it's gone to its past. You'll see most astrologers are broken into two camps right now. The ones that use ancient techniques, we go back to the roots of astrology, so to speak, when wild dogs could rip you apart in the streets, right, to the most modern astrologers, which are called EA astrologers or experiential astrologers, where there's a very therapeutic kind of astrology, so to speak. Why am I here? Soul-centered astrology kind of thing. I'm not too happy with either school. I'm very happy that we own our past, but I'm very sad that we've dumbed down our technique. As simple as that. That kind of sums it up. But the thing is that as long as the Neptune was running with this Uranus and Apollon, it means that astrology gets held back and retarded. There's no technical basis for astrology to advance. This goes with all the technologies. Facebook, the internet, computing in general, how technology is put together, even fasteners, like door fasteners and things like this. All these things are hidden right now. The implications of it, what it all means, is just not evident. Yet, it's affecting your lives, your dreams, your interfaces with the world in profound ways. Well, the interesting part is in 2025, Neptune finally crosses the cardinals itself, which is going to be a very confusing time, right? When 2025, it breaks out of this combination. It no longer crosses that midpoint. And we all start becoming much more aware of the implications of technology, right? And I cranked it back, and I talked about last year, I talked about Gutenberg's press, right, having to be the start of basically the internet as we know it, right, the idea of offshoring information outside of our brains so that we can evolve mentally, we can change mentally. Literally, when you see it in the kids right now, they really have a hard time with the new technologies and stuff because a whole portion of their mind doesn't exist anymore that we treasured and was taught to treasure, which is the development of memories. Children don't need to develop the memories the way we develop memories. They need to develop experiences now. And the memories, the learning, the rote part of things is externalized. Every time we make a movie, every time we make a phonograph, every time we take a picture, we're externalizing memories. Which meant that if you were in the 9th century or 10th century, you were your memories. Your intellect was not what you could do technically. Did you notice that in ancient history, they never give credit for the guys that made the machines? We give credit for the guys that make the machines all day long in the modern era. But in the ancient era, oh, they were just workers, tinkerers. They weren't creative. The creative ones had the good memories and could remember the great works. Because books were rare. Reading was rare. There was no way to offshore information easily. You had to teach it verbally. You had to show it physically, you see. So we get to Gutenberg's press, and the revolution of Gutenberg's press is we start to learn to offshore information. Now, a lot of things led up to Gutenberg's press. It was the time before the time, so to speak. The Chinese were already doing printing on a primitive way. In Europe, they were printing in a primitive way. This guy Donath, in particular, was making wooden typefaces and making astrological almanacs 50 years before Gutenberg's press. The beauty of Gutenberg, the technology of him, was that he was a silversmith, and he made a movable type that was made out of metal. It didn't wear out. Using the apple press was an afterthought. It was the movable type. He was a silversmith. They invested the equivalent of $13 million in today's money into that project, and it took 10 years. And that's why they chose the Bible as their first object to print, because they knew it would sell out. This was a calculated thing. Well, there was a problem with this. Now, this occurs in a period where Doug is talking about, of 500 years, where Neptune is running between Uranus and Pluto. And if you think of Uranus as being revolutionary and fast change, and Pluto being deep-seated transformational change, right? You put the two of them together, it means a fundamental transformation in society that nobody understands or has to do with the future or has to do with media in general, because Neptune rules media, it rules the future, it rules confusion, it rules drugs, it rules clouds and fogs, it rules trust. Trust me, I'll tell you the Brooklyn Bridge. So first thing, of course, coming out of Neptune at the midpoint of Uranus and Pluto, the printing press, comes the Bible. Great, everybody gets to read the Bible. The problem was, this is the overlooked part, is they start reading the Bible and they start saying, hey, where's the Pope? He isn't in here. You know, why are we paying all this money to that guy in Rome? And, of course, the Reformation starts. And within 30 to 40 years, the Hundred Years' War. A hundred-year war rages through Europe, decimating Christianity, right? As we know it, you know, from before, the corrupt Christianity, and killing a lot of people because of religious ideas. This did not happen in any of the other great religions of the world. The Muslims had their split within one lifetime, within one generation of the death of the founder, right? And remember, Muslim times, it was just considered an offshoot of Christianity. I mean, in the time when Muhammad lived, it was the Muslim movement was just a movement, just like the Catholic movement was a movement out of Judaism. It gets out of hand. Their split is between the Shia and the Sunni because of the death of the uncle and who was supposed to take over the franchise, so to speak. But that split didn't lead to a hundred-year war. It just led to a sectarian standoff that exists to this day. Never gets healed, never gets consummated. The one side never conquers the other, so to speak, just subjugates it for a while under the caliph systems. But we get to the hundred-year war in the Western world and the split in Christianity, and the technology that leads to it, the printing press, and it leads to the rise of Enlightenment. The enlightened ideas, right? The resurrection of the Greek democratic ideals, the resurrection of idea as an important element in things, which is at right angles to the concept of religion in general. Okay, we get the idea of something secular. And not only that, the libertarians make a deal with the church and say, look, we'll stay out of the spiritual realms. We're only concerned with the pragmatic realms. You leave us alone, we'll leave you alone. This never happens in any of the other religions. You know, in the other religions, right, the religion ruled and the science business was cute and tolerated. But all of a sudden, science gets a free pass and we create the Industrial Revolution, right, the technological revolution, freed the animals from slave labor, so to speak, and put the humans in their place. And, you know, the idea of work really didn't exist before the Industrial Revolution. You had activities. You made good what you could. If you farmed, you farmed. But punching a clock, the idea of even having a clock, that's all the Enlightenment. It's a secular view. And so this whole business, we get this Industrial Revolution, which is not imitated in any of the other religions. Now, the Buddhists and the Hindus, they're oblivious to it anyway. Life, the way they view life, it doesn't matter if there's an Industrial Revolution or not. It's not part of things. But the Muslim world is very critical. They missed out on it. They were part of the Judeo-Christian triad, so to speak, one of the desert religions, right, the monotheism, that didn't take part. The other two triads, the Jewish triad, the Protestant triad, the Christian Catholic triad, all take part in this Industrial Revolution. Muslims don't. They're back in the 16th century. And back in the 16th century, they ruled the world. So the printing press not only splits Christianity and makes it marginalized in today's world, how far away we are from having to live our entire lives under the cross, so to speak. How far away we are, right? And we get to the Muslim folks and stuff, and they miss that entire boat. They have no means. There's no factories. They have no means to do any of this stuff. You know, they can't do anything in the Western world, so they've been looking at it in a very strange way. Because remember, this is a secular world. It's not a spiritual world that we created. And they live in a spiritual world. A very different thing. So, Doug goes on to say, he goes, there are two or three midpoints, two or three midpoints for most centuries, for the last 2,000 years. They alternate between Uranus at the midpoint with Pluto, or Pluto at the apex, And there are two exceptions. The first is that once every 500 years, we have Neptune at the midpoint. These midpoints are the most important since they indicate a change that will influence the next 500 years. The last such midpoint was 1503 to 1506, and saw the first publication of the first maps of the Earth that were similar to the ones we use today, voyages of the previous decade had shown the Europeans there were new continents. The maps and the conceptions set forth for colonization, exploitation, etc., etc. 500 year party. The previous midpoint with Neptune at the apex was 990 to 993, and that period saw the rise of Otto I, the first ruler of the Holy Roman Empire, and the rebirth of art in the medieval period. It's called the Ottoman Renaissance. In China, the Song Dynasty started, and it soon resulted what is called the Song Renaissance. There, among other things, gunpowder and movable type were developed. The other exception is that once every 500 years, there is a century where the three outer planets are in signs of the same element, so there is a potential grand trine. In this case, all three take turns being the apex planet. This only happens, this is the only midpoint activity of that century, and the last time this occurred was 1760 to 1776. And this saw the Enlightenment and the birth of the U.S. The one before was 1240 through 1265, and the Mongol hordes from Asia, led by the grandsons of Genghis Khan, began sacking Europe for many years in the 13th century. And they may have introduced gunpowder into Europe, then mysteriously started to withdraw in 1242. Perhaps the fact climate change at this period was one of the reasons for the sudden withdrawal. Remember, we had the Little Ice Age then. But the next major century, the next quarter century, the period with this midpoint configuration was a time when the beaten Europe had to recover itself and redefine its reality. Here, the thoughts and meanings began change for these various types of outer planet midpoints began to manifest. The Uranus midpoints signify change. This is sort of default midpoint result, because Uranus moves pretty quick and makes this picture a lot. The Pluto apex midpoints are a more transformative change. But the Neptune midpoints represent the most far-reaching change, determining those next 500 years, but also the most nebulous or the least obvious. Now, he does mention about 2,500 years ago, 576 BCE, there was a triple conjunction of Uranus, Neptune, and Pluto. And since the period of Neptune is twice the period of Uranus, and that of Pluto is three times the period of Uranus, this is not impossible. The period for the conjunction of all three is about 4,000 years, so the next will occur in 3,369 CE. But for 500 years or so after this conjunction, and that is before the Common Era started, the midpoint of those three outer planets did not follow the scheme above. The midpoint of this 4,000-year cycle was in 1396, so we are in the second half already of this long cycle. But the thing he neglects to mention, of course, in 500 BC was when Buddha comes into the planet, right? And a lot of other things begin to occur. Civilizations take a real marked turn at that point, and it is the precursor to the modern era. The idea of the monotheistic religions take form, and astrology reaches an apex in Babylon. So the reason we bring it up, of course, is because in 2025, the Neptune will cross the midpoint of the Uranus and Pluto. Right? And we can look at this chart if we want to. Let's do just that. Let's take this thing here. I'm going to make this chart distorted. I'm going to make it a 90-degree dial. All right. So don't worry about the actual makeup of the degrees here. Just look at the symmetrical arrangement of things. And what we're going to do is we're going to move forward in time by a bunch of years. And let's go by 365. And watch the Neptune. Right? And we're going to put in the trans-Neptunians, and we're going to put in the midpoint of Uranus and Apollon, and there's our Neptune, and we're going to track it while we go through each yearly movement. So here we go from 2018, 2019, Right? Notice that the Neptune is still near that midpoint. It keeps going back and forth across it. Right? 2020. What are we doing? Am I doing that right? No, I'm on 31 days. We want to go to 365 days. Go back to the daily. Yeah, 2020. See the Neptune is at that midpoint. You see it? There's the Neptune. That's the looks like Neptune's triad, right? Here's the Apollon, which looks like Gemini with Jupiter, and Uranus, which looks like Uranus. Okay. Here we go again to the next year, right? We're at 2021, 2022, 2023, 2024. 2025, and Neptune crosses the cardinals, right? But also you'll note that here's Pluto, here's Uranus. Their midpoint is also very close to that Neptune. See it? Yeah. So if we go one more year, then you see that midpoint tightens right up. So 2025, 2026, we have what Doug was talking about as a massive thing. But if you'll note as well, the Neptune is no longer running at the midpoint of the Uranus and Apollon. So, two things occur in 2025. One is the implications of all the technology that we've been dealing with that have been affecting us on all kinds of levels, for good or for evil, becomes manifest. It comes into everybody's consciousness really fast. Two, along with this technological thing are technological breakthroughs. Now, several folks are, like Doug included, myself included, think that this thing called 5G that's coming is the precursor of it all. It's kind of like Skynet. All right? And 5G is going to be ubiquitous, and it's like a super speed internet. It means that, you know, you won't have cable companies anymore. It'll all be coming through the cell phone providers, and characters like Dish and stuff will own big chunks of this network. It's a low power network that requires a lot of repeaters everywhere, so it's short range. But you'll be able to download like a 20 gigabyte movie in a couple of seconds. It means that computers themselves are going to change and the phones are going to change. Because no longer will they have to have processors in them or keep memory or anything like that. These things will be so fast, the processing power will be off in the network. It won't be distributed on the machines themselves. I have to think about this right now because we have to design software that's going to be completely distributed through a network-based system. Right, so I'm already starting to get touched by this stuff. But the thing is, you have to think of it, and the precursor up to it, that the last time we have this combination, right, we get the printing press. The time before the time we have this combination, we get these renaissances in these empires, but in China, the printing press is also developed, but not the same way that it is modified in the Western world. Now, the evolution is going to come also from the East. These things keep moving towards the West. We'll find that we're going to cross the Pacific Ocean. And I think that a lot of the breakthroughs are going to be joint efforts between the North Americans and the Eastern Asiatic folks, creating a different kind of a technology that's going to have these profound implications. Now, the last time we go through this, right? Well, the time before we go through this, Genghis Khan comes and conquers Europe. It's a political event, and it has religious implications because it disrupts all the religions and allows the introduction of different ideas and whatnot. 15th century comes the Hundred Years' War, the invasion of the West throughout the entire known world. Remember, we were the guys that never took a bath. The rest of the world was very, very great hygiene, you know. We'd be smelly sailors on some rotted ship with disease and everything else landing on the shores, get everybody sick, and then they'd claim the land. And it worked all the way up to the U.S., you know, even to the point of distributing blankets with smallpox in it just to keep moving the Western brand along, you know. So it was a common way. I mean, you got to realize, you know, the Chinese and these other cultures that we subjugated were high quality, high end cultures, and we were the dirty pirates who really stuck to high hell because we wouldn't. You know, I mean, they took a bath once a year in May and got married in June. You know, that's about it. So, you know.
Who's the we?
The entire Western world as a whole. That's why we had one bubonic plague after the next, because we were filthy people. We ate rotted food all the time. It was pretty bad. Don't think the past was any good. It stunk. It's your impression of the time that's important. But here's the thing. We go and we conquer the world with all these new technologies from the West, and the fight is a religious fight, and it's a cultural dominance fight. This next one's not going to be about religion per se, but pure culturalism. In other words, the humans are going to have to determine how this all works. And, you know, I fear that following the last two were 100-year wars and big wars of intestine violence and conquering and all this other jazz, you know, I'm afraid we're going to be in for the same sort of thing for a very long time, worldwide. Yet, out of it will be a renaissance and an enlightenment beyond which the world hadn't seen before. Because this time around, true evolution will have taken place. And it's the way people conceive of everything. It's the way we work with information that's going to change. Our brains are going to get bigger. Not physically bigger. They already made the room to get bigger. It's a question of filling it out now. It's like we've come to the new world. The new world is a different way of thinking than the ancients thought, and now we can push everything out of the way and continue to grow. So all those characters in the 50s and 40s who were saying, oh, humankind has to go through a big evolution, well, they were right, but they didn't think about it. They thought we were going to grow a sixth finger or something like that, you know, or maybe learn how to fly. But no, it has to do with conceptualization and the way we think, the way we process information. And that's what it's all coming down to. And that's why the kids are having such a hard time. This generation and the next generation, you know, have a very difficult time because, you know, you remember, humans are very touchy-feely animals. I mean, we used to hang around in packs in the trees, you know. Even the bonobo apes, you know, they judged how social you were by how many people you screwed, you know. That sort of stuff. How much sex you had, how intimate you were with the group, how cohesive the group was. Now the group is not physically cohesive. So not only is it getting room in the brain for all kinds of weird-ass stuff to happen, and it's happening, right? We also are changing entirely the way we've related as living creatures since we've been crawling out of the slime. So the implications of all this is not to be lost. Now look, every astrologer wants to live in a time of great change, even if it's really bad. You know, I mean, it makes our lives exciting. You know, and having been an astrologist, probably reincarnated 40 or 50 times, right? This is one of those great times to be around for great change. I mean, you know, when I said we look at these things like chapters, most of my astrological career was looking at 2000, at the year 2000, because Kronos was going to cross the cardinal axis. And Kronos is this very high-oriented planet. It's the height of culture and civilization. You know, and we knew that when Kronos crossed the cardinals, that there would be, you know, some sort of great confrontation between the kind of rulership that we were going to be under, you know, sectarian rulership, religious rulership, something goes on. And who would have ever thought that it would be, you know, the guy in the Middle East, Bin Laden, and George Bush? It was kind of like out of the Ghostbusters where, you know, the marshmallow guy is fighting the god on top of the building. You know, it was like really silly. And it was like, my God, is this the height of civilization? But in a certain sense, it was. And we can't go back to the time before the time. Simple as that. It was the height of civilization just up until that point. And what happened? A bad event occurs in the Western world. A couple of buildings fall down. 3,000 people die, which is nothing compared to events that have occurred in the past. Hundreds of thousands of people getting massacred. Just Pol Pot alone, 3 million are shot. Right? Yet the symbolic nature of it all changes the viewpoint of the entire Western culture. Not just the individuals living in New York or Americans, the entire Western culture changed. So we're in a time now where, you know, that was what we were looking forward to, and that was a big deal, and it was very disappointing in some respects, because it was pretty mediocre, but yet now we look back 25 years later, 20 years later, and we can see that, no, it was a change in culture. There was a height of human culture and a joy prior to that time. Mm-hmm. In New York was a lot of fun. After that, it wasn't any more fun. Before that, it was all cafes opening up, everybody ate outside, whatnot. After that, it was grim. It still is, to many extent. You know, even and it's kind of grim even worse because now the place is gentrified. And it's no longer what it was. And people are living in airtight little towers, you know, 800 feet above the ground. Very strange. Now, the implications of this time are very exciting because it took me to this point, it took me to the last 10 years to begin to realize that we were actually involved in a 500-year cycle of change that is much more symbolic for the whole of society and stuff. But then we start getting into the narrow time, our close time. What have we been going through, you know? And it's kind of like, well, we came up to 2017. It was like, and 2 years before 2017, I was looking at it and saying, oh, my God, I don't want to look at this. Keep it away, you know, the light is blinding. You know, and it was a really scary kind of a thing. And it came to pass. And we're living with its consequences at this point in time, which brings us to the now. We're in between two large things. We're in between that Saturn as a canary in the coal mine telling us that we have to get our shit together now. Saturn is really pragmatic, you know. Saturn is like the guy that's going to come and repossess your car. I mean, you know, they give you the 30-day notice, you better pay your bill, you know, and they give you the 15-day notice, hey, we're going to come and take it. And then at the end of the 15 days, they come and take the car. That's all there is to it. And, you know, and in the 80s, the climate change business was very well, let's go back to real time here. And let's go back to the cardinal axis. We can begin to look at this thing. As a matter of fact, let's look at this wheel here, and I'll explain what's going on with this. But we get to this thing, and we're at this time where Saturn hits the cardinal axis, and it says, clock's running. And we knew it in the 80s, clock was running. Okay, here's what you got to do, you know? And, of course, Saturn doesn't like change. Saturn really is the concept of conservatism in the sense that they really don't want change. They want the clock to go back. But yet, Saturn is pragmatic. And really pragmatic. And logic to the extreme. I mean, you know, the wisdom of Solomon. How can we like a guy who's going to cut a baby in half? I think that was a wise idea. Of course, it forced the people to do what he wanted them to do. But if one of them had refused, he would have cut the baby in half. It would have been too wise an idea then. But Saturn is Solomon. Saturn is logic carried to an extreme. And he's laid out the rules, basically. And last year, he showed us where extremes can go if we don't keep control. You know, society used to be self-regulating. We forgot that it was self-regulating since World War II. You know, those damn kids with that rock and roll and stuff, that's just going to blow away everything in society. And it did. The generation with Pluto and Leo did destroy the norms. At least the norms that were Saturnine, that had to do with guys like J.D. Rockefeller and stuff like that, that, you know, white guys that are rich should be running the world. kind of a thing. And Saturn really wants to throw us back to that concept. You know, I mean, you think about it. To give you an example of how silly things are on a very local level, right? There's a liquor store down here on Route 137, right, on Millstone Road. And this town had voted to be pro-marijuana and allow retail, right? So a guy proposed a retail store next to the liquor store. No buildings around it or anything like that. And the town goes crazy. Oh, my God. They're going to have kids walking past this. There's no kids walking there. They're going to have these kids walking past this pot store. They're going to put a hook out and pull them in and turn them into monsters. You know, make them addicted to all these drugs and stuff. And it's things like, wait a second. Where do you cite these things? You know, is this next to a liquor store in the middle of nowhere? There isn't a better place to put the darn thing. Well, on a larger sense, it's a similar kind of a thing going on in our larger society, where the Saturn hit that cardinal axis with the Sun, really point the finger, you guys better get it together, and we didn't. You know, the election last time in 2016 and all the events that have been going on in the world are much more like Simon Legree more than anything else. Now, as silly as it is to say, gee, we shouldn't be putting a pot shop next to a liquor store, is as silly as poor people electing a billionaire for their president. Yes. I mean, is he going to look out for your affairs? No, I don't think so. You know, do billionaires look out for anybody else's affairs? No. Everyone I've seen, kind of like, they don't see much past the mirror. You know? And I have counseled rich people. I have counseled poor people. You know, I am at the end of my career, not the beginning of my career. And I have seen a lot. And I'll tell you, the rich people, you get the mirror away from them and there's not much there. You know? And that's the thing. So it's as silly as that. So Saturn is just telling us, you're going to make errors on a social level, on a larger social level. There is a price to pay. And it's a damn large price to pay. And, of course, it gets sillier and sillier as time is going on. Now, just a side note about all of that stuff, is the British astrologers, my British friends over there, were all saying that the president was going to fall in August. And I said, no, I don't think so. They said, but he's going to be on his way down at that point. He's on a downward trajectory right now. He came into power with Saturn on his Sun by opposition. It's not the time you take power,
yeah.
Because the responsibilities are too large. Mm-hmm. That's the time when you say, no, I don't think I'll take that job. I prefer my retirement. You know, it's like, do I really want to get involved in all of this? Is the kind of a combination it is. And this thing comes along, and you know, he went and ran under the combination. The person he ran against was extremely vilified. She had no business running. None whatsoever. You know, any time that the polls or whatever are saying that, you know, you're an iffy candidate or something like that, and you're not going to do something really unique, right, you shouldn't be there. You know, it's kind of like, honestly, Nancy Pelosi should not become the Speaker of the House. Mm-hmm. It's a lightning rod. You know, they should get someone who could actually get something done. Even though she's extremely talented, and she could raise more money than anybody else and get all the legislative stuff through, she's a lightning rod. She's branded goods. So it's that sort of a thing. So, you know, you do these obvious things, and Saturn's going to come back and it's going to knock you on the head for doing these things. So he came into power with the Saturn opposing his Sun, which isn't a good idea astrologically to begin with. You know, it means you're way over your head. And then Saturn came over, right, and it hit Hades, which has to do with the refugees. This whole business with the refugees, as fast as the rhetoric about it stopped the election, the issue is still there, and it's going to stop soon by the time the solstice is over. And not to come back. It's not going to be a big deal anymore. You know? Because it was Hades and Saturn. Now, this does not mean that it's a poor object. Hades and Saturn rules refugees in their traditional sense. Poor, miserable people who have a horrible existence and they need some sort of shelter. It's as simple as that. And that's not just happening here. It's worldwide. The worst place is Australia. Australia will throw you back in the city. Boom, get out of here. You come, you land on the beach, they'll throw you right back in the city. They have patrol boats out all day long, making sure nobody comes over on a raft. You know, but it's worldwide. It's worldwide. The Rohingya refuse to go back to Malaysia because they, you know, they're in Bangladesh now, and it's like, oh my God, these are our brothers. You know, those people are going to kill us over there. So this idea of the refugee status of people in the world at this point in time is huge. And the fact that Syria gets blown apart, all those people are living in camps. You know, large portions of Afghanistan, there's no relocation for these folks. Half of them are in Pakistan. You know, they're still dealing with refugees over the line of demarcation between Pakistan and India. The Chinese are making refugees out of their Muslim population right within their own country. The idea of the worker migrants that happen in China, where they have to take the trains back and forth between their little villages and stuff to work in these soulless cities and stuff like that, is another situation, another refugee situation. So this is a worldwide issue. It's not going away. It's not unique to the United States on any level. As a matter of fact, it's pretty lame over here. Because really, honestly, we only have one border access in the U.S., and it is the Mexican border. And actually, it's Central America, if you really get it. If you play a lot of Risk, it's Central America. The only way you get to the United States is if you swim here. There's no other way to get here. It's the same thing with armies. You know, the armies aren't coming here. We're not going to get invaded, per se, because there's no logistical way to bring them over, even with modern technology. It's just not going to happen. So a lot of these things are really... So Saturn is this pragmatic guy. He says basically you got to do stuff or else you're going to have to pay the bills. And he does want to go backwards in time. He doesn't understand that there's new technology. But the reason I keep talking about it is because Saturn could be the most revolutionary planet of all. When Saturn is pushed to the wall, he does things very, very differently. Take, for example, Hitler's Final Solution. Right? It would push to the wall. This is what all they could think of. Let's go back in time. We always hated these guys in the first place. You know, doesn't mean the solution is a good one, but it's revolutionary. Now, the last combination that passed through was Uranus and Pluto, right? In terms of the heavy outer planets, is you've got Pluto as our slowest moving character. Neptune's the next slowest, and then the next slowest for that is Uranus. So when Uranus hits Pluto, it's a big deal. It doesn't happen for every 90 to 100 years or so, because they're both moving. And it means revolutionary change. The last time that they were, now this was a square we've been through, right? But the last time they were conjunct was the mid-60s, the rise of the hippies and everything else. We get the square, now we get the rise of the millennials. You know, very different. But the idea is still the same. It's radical revolution. I don't like society the way it is right now. I got to topple it. Okay? Well, we knew it was coming, and we knew that this revolutionary axis was coming into play. And yet, we thought that possibly Obama was this Uranus character. You know, first black guy in America. First time that a liberal agenda is getting, a progressive agenda is getting pushed forward in America in 20 years, that sort of stuff. But no, it does turn out that it was Trump was the revolutionary character. And the Uranus-Pluto stuff is short-lived. It's not long-lived, all right? It's a short-lived change. It doesn't have that depth that you need to give something a really long-distance run. Now, the Uranus has left the Pluto, right? And everybody that's been involved in the inner circle, They have stuff in the late cardinal signs, late Capricorn and stuff. Kellyanne Conway is a good example. Which means that, like Hitler's crew, right? Hitler had 7 years before it all went south, you know, basically. He's funny marching Napoleon, it's all over. Like his crew, Hitler is ruled by Uranus throughout his entire rise. And the minute Uranus leaves him, it all falls apart. 1943, it goes right down the tubes. And all of the folks associated with getting the president into power all have material in the late cardinal signs that Uranus is leaving them this year. They're all getting abandoned. En masse. While the Uranus was there, they all did good. Very good. But just as fast, Uranus gives and takes really fast. Uranus is not like Saturn, where he tells you what he's going to do. He just goes and does it arbitrarily. It's very, very autocratic. So the Uranus is leaving this guy, and what's left is Saturn's going to come and hit off this Pluto in January of 2020 at the close of this period, which is why this is a transitionary period. And the interesting thing, though, is every astrologer is focused on the Saturn-Pluto conjunction. They all are. And what they're not focused on is Jupiter-Pluto. Right after the Saturn and Pluto hits once, it's kind of like it's barking, like a barking dog now, and the bark is going to be worse than the bite. The bite's going to be very fast. It's going to be a short, sharp, singular event. It's going to happen quick, just like cutting off the ear, and then it moves on. And then Jupiter comes and hangs out with that Pluto three times, gently, conjoining three times, and then goes off and makes the conjunction to Saturn in the next sign. Saturn wants to get back in the game. I mean, Saturn goes flying through, runs into Aquarius, and immediately turns around and says, oh my God, he wants to run back and get to that Pluto before the Jupiter does, and he doesn't make it. So something else is going on here. It's kind of like we're in the period right now where the Band-Aid's about to get ripped off. Okay, that's the significance of this solstice. I'm calling it the Band-Aid getting ripped off. So we stop for 1 second, and let's look at the U.S. Specifically. And if we look at this chart here, let's see if my mouse. Where's my mouse? It's not working. Let's do this and do this. Or we do this. There we go. This guy ain't working anymore.
Mercury.
Yeah, Mercury Red. That's the other thing, too, by the way. I'll tell you about why we chose today to do this, one of the worst combinations to do such a thing. really. But notice now we're looking at our chart, right? Here's our top of the chart. Here's the horizon that we spoke about earlier, right? What is setting is Saturn. That's Saturn there. You see that funny-looking guy there? And that's his little tick mark, and he's setting in Washington. Right, so he's not setting for Libya. He's not setting for Russia. He's setting for Washington. The seventh house has to do with your partnerships. It's where you're going. It's your destination. It's the place out there. It's how you deal with the other. Right? Saturn setting, a lot of separation going on. A lot of problems or issues dealing with the relationship thing in the place. Next thing to note, we have Hades, right here, the little circle with the cross in it, rising. Hades rules garbage and dirt. That's why when you get Hades together with Saturn, it rules aliens, right? Because, as I say, they're poor people that have no means, you know? It also rules the aliens from outer space, by the way.
Hades
Saturn rules aliens from, international, interplanetary aliens, as well as the aliens that are crossing the border. And so we have Hades rising for the U.S., and if this was a doctor's chart, it would be great, because Hades ascendant is the misery of the people. And a doctor, the signature of a doctor is Hades plus ascendant minus the sun, because he's the guy that has to deal with people that are miserable all day long. It's that kind of a thing, right? You don't deal with healthy people, you deal with sick people. It's the thing. So Hades rising means we're a dirty place. The pollution is here, not elsewhere. here. We have dirt here. In California, nobody can breathe right now. Right? The fires are so thick. Doug was telling me in Ashland all summer long, they were going out with masks on all day long because it's toxic out there. So you think of huge areas of toxicity hanging out from persisting from these fires. And, you know, it ain't just wood smoke. You know, if you take out 12,000 buildings and you got every chemical on the planet out there. Mm-hmm. You know?
That was the word of the year. Toxic.
And that's the word of the year in the Oxford Dictionary. That is mm-hmm. correct. It beat out, what was the one it beat out a really silly one.
Yeah.
But, so, Hades rises for the U.S., Saturn sets, and when we look at the midheaven, the highest point in the sky, right, it's running between Mars and Neptune. Now, Mars and Neptune is what you do when you fall off the wagon and you're an alcoholic. You binge. Yes. And you get very ill. Mars-Neptune rules pandemics. Mars-Neptune rules illness and diseases. Mars-Neptune in a natal chart is the immune system compromised. Okay? Mars-Neptune is the guy who shoots the messenger and doesn't take any action against the guy who issued the message. In other words, the energy is positioned wrong, right? Mars-Neptune rules impotency. It also rules serial rapists. Mars-Neptune rules disorientation with one's sexual matters. In other words, the person can only get horny if somebody else is jumping around in a bunny suit or something. You know, it's like, it's really ridiculous at times, okay? Mars-Neptune is the concept of role-playing to the point of ad nauseum. Mars-Neptune is wars that are fought over the wrong thing. Mars-Neptune is poisoning in general, infections. It also rules magicians. That pulls the rabbit out of the hat, right? But it's always a trick. Mars-Neptune always has to compensate for not having enough energy, right? Mars-Neptune is a situation where I always counsel clients when they have a Mars-Neptune combination to be like the Zen master, to eat when they're hungry and sleep when they're tired. Because if they oversleep, or if they overeat, or undereat, or undersleep, they're in deep trouble. Their energy levels go off the charts. So we have four malefics here, angular for the United States. Three of them have to do with poisons, right, and infections. One of them has to just do with dirt and poverty in general. It's not like it for us to be like this, where we have the strongest currency in the world right now, and everything else seems to be good. But the truth is, we're a pariah nation. If you'll notice, we just had the 100th anniversary of World War I, and nobody said hi to the president except for Putin, and he refused to really take part in things. World War I shaped our lives as it is today. And everything, from the Middle East on out, has all been shaped by World War I. World War II was just a continuation of World War I. Now, as we look back at that as history, the years in between World War I and World War II were just an interlude, because it was basically the European Revolution. World War I, we kill all the kings. World War II, we had to kill all the false kings. Simple as that. You know, and finally, get the realization that we have to take control of the world on our own as a society. Hence the 1947 and the rise of the international agreements. And we'll talk about that, because that was the Saturn-Pluto conjunction that created the world after World War I. So this 100-year anniversary was one of the most significant events for the world, and the U.S. in particular. And we blew it. We blew it. World War I was the war that made the U.S. the leader of the 20th century, period. Prior to World War I, right, everything was all about England. After World War I, it was kind of like we abdicated our responsibilities and allowed World War II to occur. We were supposed to be part of the League of Nations. But we had a very strong conservative movement in the U.S. after that. Nationalistic movement that blew that away. So here we are again. We're a pariah. We have no friends. Saturn in the seventh house. We have no partners. Period. Not only that, we're going to need help because we're going to have no wherewithal. I'm going to tell you, right now the U.S. currency is trading at $1.12 to the euro. That's phenomenal. Usually it's $1.30, you know? And which means we can go over to Europe and buy a new car a lot cheaper than you can buy it here, right, with U.S. dollars. Now you travel a lot, you know, hey, dollars king right now, right? Nice cheap hotel rooms, that sort of stuff. But the rest of the world is plotting like crazy to get rid of the U.S. dollar as the reference currency. Because they have to pay back their debts in the dollar. They're at the mercy of the U.S. printing press on the dollar. We're terrible about it. And we just squash it. And so they're going crazy, and that's why the rise of the cryptocurrencies. Cryptocurrencies aren't just somebody's idea to make, you know, easy money or something like that. Let's speculate on the darn things. These are attempts. It's like anguished attempts, you know, where they get the battering ram and they're going, and they're never going to get the door down, and they're going crazy anyway, and they all get shot and killed, and then send more out and try, as a futile effort to try and crack the U.S. dollar. Right? China is trying to position its own currency, but it can't, failing, because they're under the weight of their own internal problems, right, which has to do with easy credit and everything else. So realize, we're in a giant war, and it's a currency war. And anything, they'll do anything, and we're winning. We won that war, essentially. But they'll do anything to get rid of this darn thing. And should that crack out, we go the way of Argentina overnight. All right? Now, the fear that's going to be put into you is going to be, oh, we owe too much money, $14 trillion, and this and that. We borrowed too much money, and somebody's going to call the debt, and that's going to be the end of it. But the truth of the matter is, nobody holds the debt that's going to call it. The entire U.S. debt, outside of $1 trillion to China and another $900.9 trillion to Japan, these guys hold some of our treasury notes, right, that sort of stuff. It's all held by IRAs. The whole U.S. is not going to gang up and do a class action suit to get their money back from the treasuries. They're going to take their IRAs out one at a time, just like they take their Social Security out one at a time. There's never going to be a big call or a big run on the U.S. debt, but the U.S. capability to pay that debt back with real dollars, so to speak, dollars that have value, is suspect. Just take a look at Argentina, or take a look at Russia right after the fall, where guys were on pensions equivalent to $300 a month or so, you know, that sort of thing. And overnight, it goes down to 16 cents. And all the babushkas start, you know, the women with scarves start starving, you know, because their husbands are dead, and this is what they're living on. And this can happen here very, very rapidly. And that's kind of what this is showing in many respects, because Haiti's rising is not good for the people. Notice what's just below the Hades is Kronos, which is a cross with a half circle on top. Right? And as I mentioned, Kronos is the highest that we hit in a society that we go through in social change. And right after the 2025 Enlightenment period, where, you know, like I say, technological implications come out. And you remember, this is not like one day Apple makes an announcement and we've got something that's going to change the world. This is building up over a 25-year period, over a decade period, more, over a generation, over two generations. Doug tends to put it with the ENIAC computer as being one of the major midpoints. That, you know, to him it's all about, you know, well, he's a programmer, you know. All you got is a hammer, you hit nails. But, you know, to him it's all about the computers being the central transformative thing. And he's correct, but it is beyond that. It actually has to do with the way we conceive, the way we visualize, the way we look at stuff. So, given this change, right after 2025, that Hades, this little guy here, starts running into conjunction with Kronos for a very long time. And Hades Kronos is a corrupt government or a corrupt institution. The corruption damage done to our institution wasn't just done by the guy that's the president. It was built up, I'd say, since before Newt Gingrich. You know? It's been built in the U.S. anyway. This has been a long time coming, the stabilization of institutions, but it's worldwide. So governments become poor. Governments become corrupt. They're not the places that one will need to look for any relief, help, or anything like that.
When is that?
2027, it peaks out. And it'll stay in conjunction for a good 4 to 5 years before it starts breaking up. So it's just a bad time for organizations and things like that. Now, so that's for the U.S. right at the moment. The U.S. isn't looking very good, even though we stand on top of the world, so to speak, on just a personal level. The rest of the world isn't going to be as deep down as we're going to get. They're going to do other things, right? Because there is something else going on in the world at large. It's a larger energy. We just have the dumb luck to pick the worst spot in the planet, in the horoscope to drop our ascendant for this particular era. You know, we dropped anchor in a bad place, and in fact, that part's not going to get much better. So as I say, we've already blown it with our buddies and friends and allies and whatnot, and the implication of that is a lot larger than what seems to be at the moment. Right, that's going to be a real big deal, and I get the sense that, you know, the world is going to make us poor also through new technologies and stuff like that in ways that we're not applying them. You know, that's kind of a thing where, you know, where the Chinese invented printing and we're the ones that mastered it. The U.S. has invented a lot of things the rest of the world is going to do quite well with, which, you know, and, you know, we do need to think of this country in actually a very, very different way. You know, when we did the space race, we invented all kinds of material through the government. The government, NASA invented Tang. They invented Teflon, right? Composite materials, like in the space suits, where you had the layers of aluminum and plastic and the various materials. And what did we do? We said, well, it's in the public domain. But you guys can't use that information. Are you going to go out and start a Teflon factory? No. Very few people benefited from that, and they benefited at our largesse. All the firms that made Teflon after that, that made Tang, that made all the composite materials we deal with today, they got a free ride on the taxpayer dollars. And that was a narrow, narrow set of people. The United States should have been selling these things and licensing them out for the good of everybody. That's the Commonwealth. You know, that's the upside of socialism, is that the country can be profitable and distribute the goods to its own people. We sold ourselves down the river, and we continue to do so. Every time we sell a B-1 bomber or an F-22 to a foreign country, we're giving away technology. And a few people profit from that, and we pay for the rest. We pay for all the R&D and all that stuff. Right? The minute it lands in Saudi Arabia, guys from every other country in the world are all looking at it and saying, oh yeah, we can take this. Oh, it looks pretty good. Nice design. And we don't profit from it. We don't profit at all. So the U.S. has to think of itself more as a business for the people, for the good of the people, as opposed to providing goods and services using antique models like customs exchange and things like that. The way we develop taxes and whatnot, you got to remember, it goes back to the Roman times and the values of the goods of the Roman times. We're a different period altogether. So the U.S. is in this kind of a stinky position, but when we look at the world, right, and we begin to look at the world now, this is what's called a 360-degree dial. When people that are very familiar with this kind of a wheel, the pizza pie wheel, this is a wheel that's based on the day and the location. When we look at the 360-degree dial, we're based on the year. And the location is incidental. You see, the midheaven could be anywhere on this chart. The ascendant could be anywhere. Now, this is set up for Washington. So there's that Hades again. And there it is, running with the ascendant. And then you can see the Hades running to its conjunction with Kronos. The red lines mean retrograde. But if we look down at the bottom of this chart, we'll note two things. One, Cupido, this Jupiter with Venus in it, is just what it is, Jupiter with Venus. Now, Cupido rules art, marriage, things like that. Is crossing over 0 degrees of Capricorn along with the Sun. And you'll note that Jupiter is running conjunct Mercury. Now, I always call that diarrhea of the mouth. I always tell people when they have that transit or the combination that they need to record everything that they think of, because they're going to think of 20 ideas every hour. One of those ideas are really good, the rest are crap, and then they should keep that and look at it later, because then they can discern which ones were good ideas and which ones were bad, you know. But Jupiter Mercury is lots of talk. And if you'll notice, the Jupiter Mercury has got a dotted line here, like a triangle, connecting Pluto. Okay? So Pluto, Jupiter stand on the cardinals. Okay? And if the distance is equidistant, it's a symmetrical picture. You see this here, it's like 5 degrees, 10 degrees, 15 degrees, 20 degrees to Jupiter, to Pluto, 5 degrees, 10 degrees, 15 degrees, 20 degrees to Jupiter on the other side. It's strong symmetrical. And the fact that it's a blue dashed line means it's within 9 minutes of arc. So it's really tight. Right? And if we look at the Pluto itself, we'll see that the Pluto is exactly square one of these little funny planets called Zeus. Zeus has to do with the military, has to do with manufacturing. It's very organized. It rules gunpowder and bullets and things like this. Right? So we go back to the cardinal axis. And we've got Pluto and Zeus reflecting Jupiter and Mercury with Cupido and the Sun at the middle. Well, Pluto and Jupiter is what we're going to see a lot of in 2020. And I call it the teddy bear combination, because the image is of the child growing up with the teddy bear, and they love their teddy bear, and can't live without their teddy bear, and they have to sleep with their teddy bear. And one day, they're about 4 years old, mom comes in, picks it up by its ear, and goes, "Oh, you got to get rid of this thing. You crazy, no, don't take my teddy bear. Please don't take this thing away." And, you know, the mother says, "Look, its eyes are falling out. I'll tell you what, I'll put it in a box so you can have it when you're 21. And she takes the teddy bear away, and you go crazy. You go crazy for a couple of months. Until if you're a girl, you might find Barbie dolls, or if you're a boy, you find little army guys, and all of a sudden that teddy bear, that one possession that you've invested into, becomes many possessions, becomes many things. More opportunities are happening here. You start expanding out your social life, you start expanding out your toy life, so to speak. Or another picture would be the car. You buy a new car, you love your car, but after 10 years, nobody wants to get in it anymore. You don't understand why. You still love your car. You still see it as a new car, but it's beyond the pale until finally the mechanic says, no, we're going to have to junk this thing. And you go crazy, especially when you see the sticker shock of what new cars really cost, you know? And you buy the new car and you hate it. It sucks. It's like, you can't figure anything out. Nothing works right. You know, it's like, God damn it. But then after 2 weeks, it's like, oh, this is pretty good. And after a month or so, it's like, oh my God, how did I drive that old piece of shit? You know, ask Jupiter Pluto. Jupiter Pluto takes things away you don't want to lose, but you've outgrown. They're no longer valid. So it's doing you a favor. It's taking it away. And in its vacuum, better things happen. Much better things. Jupiter-Pluto rules the kernel formula for wealth, right? Because it means that Jupiter is wealth itself, and the Pluto keeps doubling and doubling and doubling it. But Pluto, in its basic sense, has to purge. Pluto has to reduce you to your basic essence. It has to strip everything away so that you can rebuild yourself. You know, people go through Pluto experiences, they think they've died. You know, and then they resurrect, come up. There's something new going on. So Pluto and Jupiter is a positive change. This is a really nice glimmer of hope to see, and for the world. This means that the world goes through a change that it doesn't want to go through, but it's good for it. Here, take the medicine. It's good for you. You'll feel better tomorrow, right? And it's happening with Cupido and the Sun. Now, there are micro pictures here that are critical, but on the face of it, this is a very positive change. This means the world is transitioning from that Saturn crap that we saw in 2017 to this other business where we're going to have this enlightenment bit, but we're going to hit it on a Saturn thing. We're in between. And it comes down to the reason I did this talk today. The reason I did this talk today was for two purposes. One, I did not want to do it before the election, right, because I didn't want to get into the game of doing election predictions, right? And two, I picked specifically the fact that the Mercury is stationing with Neptune and Venus is stationing near Uranus by square, right? So we're getting two stations happening today and yesterday, right? Venus doesn't go retrograde that often. Mercury goes retrograde a couple of times a year, three times a year. But the Mercury stationing with Neptune means that anything you hear right now is lies, damned lies, and not to be believed whatsoever, but should be inspirational. All right? Which means I can say anything I want today. Really? I'm not kidding. And the Mercury is changing, so we're in a period now where there's really the beginning of unclarity. Serious unclarity is going to start happening. If you thought there was all nonsense about what's fake news and what isn't fake news and all this other jazz, no, it's going to be complete fake scenery. Reconstructed. And not just by the rulers here in the U.S. or anything like that. This is worldwide. This is the way the world is reconceiving material. Now, it also means it's enlightened. Mercury and Neptune has to do with spiritual thinking. It has to do with contemplating things that are beyond the now. Mercury and Neptune has to do with the future, or thinking about the future. But it also has to do with lies, damned lies, and deceit. So how Mercury and Neptune lies is it lies the way a pickpocket works. You know, it says, here, look over here. Well, it's picking your pocket over there. It always works through distraction. You know, I had a nephew come and visit one time, right? And apparently some bad marks came from school, right? And to block the fact that the bad marks were coming from school, he lost his cell phone wet at the beach and broke his cell phone. So his parents were all upset about breaking the cell phone. And it successfully blocked the fact that they didn't notice that his marks were so bad. So it was a successful Mercury-Neptune operation. And that's how Mercury and Neptune works. So they always tell the truth. And tell you something, Mercury-Neptune always has the truth right in front and then lies right on top of it. Because it deflects it, pushes it away. Right? So this is happening in the sky right now. And this is going to continue all the way up to the first couple of weeks in December before it turns around, just prior to this solstice. The Venus turn, on the other hand, has gone back and gone over the same places that Mars went over just a few months ago. So it's kind of like there's a double retread going on here. Mars came through and did all this aggressive stuff, and now this Venus is coming through and it's trying to fix everything. I don't know how successful it's going to be. When Venus turns on Uranus, it means that people have a too refined a taste for everybody else to comprehend. All right? It's kind of like a Venus-Uranus person, you know, they want their coffee done in a latte with a little design on it, maybe a little crest on the side, whereas everybody else just says, give me coffee. Stop that shit. You know, I just want a plain cup of coffee. Don't give me any of this crap. Let us still agree. But this is where Venus is stationing. So Venus is caught up in innuendo. But we can also say that the Venus stationing with Uranus is the sudden revolution led by women in the country during this election. You know, that Venus was going retrograde during the entire period. Now it's just turned. And Abrams conceded in Georgia. And two women picked up seats in California as representatives. So it really has to do with unfortunately it's a little ephemeral. This revolution is on thin ice, so to speak. In other words, how interested are the women going to be in running in 2 years as conditions change again? You know, right now it's driven by a lot of anger and things and reactionary stuff, which would be Uranus and Venus. So we have those two guys going. So that's today, and the reason and one of the reasons I picked all of this is because it's kind of like being at the next tide. You know, it's the period where the tide's about to change, but it's at that low point and everything's still and stopped. So we can talk about this messaging, and then chaos comes back and intrudes again, right? And that's what will happen over the next couple of weeks. Now, the other thing that's important about this solstice as well is two other points that are very critical here, and that is that this Cupido crossing the cardinals and Venus is running with Poseidon half-squaring it. Venus and Poseidon is a congregation of the faithful. It's people that have the same similar beliefs. It's extremely platonic. It's not at all a hot-to-trot Venus. If you'll notice that Victoria's Secret is losing market share like crazy at this point in time, it makes perfect sense. The discussions of what's going on with Mike Pence and the evangelicals at this point in time is a precursor to what's actually going to happen by the time we get to Christmas. Right? What happens to people of faith worldwide is critical. And what the answer is Cupido, which has to do with the family. When Cupido rules the family, the clan, marriage. There's a bad side of Cupido. It rules things like, it rules the past as well. It rules museums, collections where beautiful collections are. It rules stringed instruments, particularly stringed instruments. Great violinists, great violists all have strong Cupidos, right? So anywhere you see a symphony orchestra is a Cupido situation. It's a group gathered together to make a cultural statement. The bad news with Cupido is it's elite. It rules the clique. It's the group in high school that, you know, with the football guys and stuff like that, and then you have the guys down in the industrial arts group hanging around, and then you have the people hanging around working on the yearbook or whatever, and they were all little groups and little cliques. And the one clique, of course, feels it's better than the next clique. This is how wars start. So Cupido rules the tribe. Okay? And the concept of the tribe. This is why nationalism right now is extremely popular. And why it will always be with us. Right? Because it's a Cupido-ruled object. So this idea of Jupiter-Pluto with Cupido at the middle would say, good news for a marriage. Good news for a society. A positive change. You know, let's start this thing now. By the way, I haven't been recording this part up to this part. I missed turning on the recorder at the right time. So now the recorder is on, but we do have the video part. So the whole first part of this talk is going to be looking at me. I'll try and cut in some of the charts when I do the video and do the editing on that. But Mercury is retrograde with Neptune. Something's going to get forgotten. I thought it was going to be the coffee. All right. So we have this Cupido now crossing on the cardinals. And let's take a look at the Pluto plus Jupiter, right, by itself, right, is fortunate development, change or transformation. Fortunate transformations and changes in general, right? But remember, I've always said that it has to do with changes that are difficult to begin with. You know, everybody looks at this, oh yeah, this is great, but I'm not too sure about that. It might not be as much fun as you think. Let's put this down here, we'll kind of stick it in there. Now, if we minus Cupido from the axis, we get fortunate development in art, or the family, or in a community. Family is reunited to continue its former life. Remember, because it has to do with the past. And the idea is it's changed, right? So we get this idea that groups do better, tribes do better, and that sort of thing. But there's always the side notes in all of these things. We're going to have to look at a lot of the minor parts of this. Now, the other thing, too, is we get Poseidon and Venus running in half square to that, right? Poseidon, Venus, religion, faith, world concept, inclinations for spiritual things, platonic love, minus Cupido, right? Is the religious community, the church, the confession of faith, religious art serving the religion, religious affairs in the family, you know, the tribe that's associated through its religious orientation. So, like I said, there's something going on in the evangelical movements worldwide, and it's going to play a very large role. Now, something else to note, that Pluto and Jupiter are running in half square, but so is Mercury and Pluto, and Mercury and Zeus. So Mercury and Zeus, right, is to command, to threaten, the dictator, creative thinking, laws, edicts, decrees, right, minus Pluto, right, to lean towards, to learn to command and to obey, the development of creative thinking, minus Jupiter, is good command, good laws, laws concerning pleasures or money, success or profit through creative ideas, connectual contacts and correct and successful thinking, humor, wit, being very fast and light in one's breezy things. Not a bad combination, wouldn't you say? That the world gets a break on a certain level. The world goes more xenophobic. The institutions get more corrupt. But everybody's happy about it. They don't want to give up what they don't want to give up. What was it? South Park was on the other night, and it was about Al Gore's man bear pig killing everybody because the old baby boomers made a deal with the devil, right, to get things. and so the South Park kids reopened up negotiation with the man bear thing to, and the man bear wants them all to give up a game, one of the video games, right? I think what the Western one, Revenant, Red Dead or whatever it is. Dead Redemption or something like that. Yeah, and he comes back and says, "Well, all we have to do is give up this video game and a few other things, and they'll be off our backs." And everybody goes, "Oh." So you go back and you see them negotiating. Okay, you can go back and kill everybody in 20 years. And they're renegotiating the whole thing. But it's that kind of a thing. Nobody wants to give up what's necessary for the good change to occur. Right? And laws and edicts and decrees are going to come down to try and force these things. That's not going to work too well either. But at least it is a break. It's a breath of fresh air. Now, here we are on this 90-degree dial bit, and the reason I'm on the 90-degree dial thing to look at this is so that you get the sense of the symmetry, what's going on here. All this dial does is take that other wheel and drop out all the soft aspects. So we're looking at very harsh, rigid combinations, and when we're doing predictive work, we want to be, you know, challenged by these rigid combinations because they create events, right? So here we are. There's our Pluto, our Zeus, right? There's our Mercury and our Jupiter. And you see they make a big black line here. They're connected to the cardinal axis, right? And then you see there's the Cupido running to the cardinals. There's the Venus and the Poseidon and all that religious stuff and whatnot going on there. Cute, right? But if we go and we look at the Cupido itself, we see it stands at the midpoint of Moon and Saturn and Uranus and Admetos. So if we take the picture of Saturn and the Moon minus Cupido, we get the marriage of a widow, the death of a nation, or the death cult of a nation, the hours of relaxation in the evening. So everybody's so stressed out, they're going to fall down at night. But these are death cults. These are not good things. It means that this xenophobic movement, this sense of religious community, because remember, see, it's making the half square here to Venus and Poseidon, which is the reason it's a religious thing,
isn't very good. It's very depressing. So that's going to underwrite a lot of things. And it stands with Uranus and Admetos. See, if we go back to the Cupido, the Uranus and Admetos is even stronger. When the towers fell in 2001, in 9/11, there was a beautiful Mercury-Jupiter combination in the sky. It was a beautiful day out, mm-hmm. and it was a really, you know, and who would have known that the Mercury-Jupiter turned out to be a lot of news talking, right? But the only other major combination was Uranus and Admetos. And they were running, I think they were running in square time. But the public is under the impact of violent commotions and events, to be separated from the public. Rags to tear up, to break off, to break down, to crush. It's one of the things about this combination. Let me see if you can get this a little better here. See? Yeah, I know. Yeah, it's to crush, shock a violent commotion, murder, destruction through convulsions, earthquakes. Well, that kind of stuff. Isn't that cute? Right? And it stands with Cupido. Right? So, oops. So we have to subtract Cupido from the picture, and we get the idea of sudden break off with a community, club, or family, to be snubbed by a community or a crew, to be suddenly alone or lonely. Well. And it's running with Moon and Saturn. Now, in an electional horoscope like this, in an ingress, the Moon is a nation. The government. It's not an individual. It's or it's the ambient feeling that everybody has as a mob, as a whole. Like I said, pretty depressed. Religious things aren't being very happy. Lots of crushing going on. Not a good idea. So the family structure, while on the surface it looks great, right? You're all going to get tired of winning. When you dig a little deeper, it's not too good. The families aren't very good. There is a lot of sadness going on, really, literally. That's literal sadness. Grief is a good way to put it. Now, if we look at the midheaven of the U.S., there's that Mars and Neptune. Actually, if we look at the midpoint of the Mars and the Neptune, right, this is a critical picture. It stands with the Moon in midheaven for the U.S., and it stands with Apollon. And basically, Mars-Neptune with Apollon is big scandals, widespread infections, nasty stuff. It's like, here, infection and destruction of many. Many are deluded and live in false hope. Extensive destructions. Really what I see is like the wrong idea or the wrong concept. So with minus the Moon, the nations of the world, right? Infection of the woman, atrophy of the brain, disturbance of the glandular system, abnormal disposition. Pretty much it. So, emotionally, the world's not a very happy place. Financially, the world is extremely happy, right? Because Jupiter and Pluto, standing with the cardinals, as we've seen, is very, very positive, right? Now, the Moon stands roughly with the MC reflecting Saturn and Kronos.
So will all the cell towers be obsolete?
In essence, they'll become obsolete, but they'll be used for something else. You know, probably larger repeaters for the little guys. You know?
Yeah, get some food.
But that's not a big infrastructure project. There's nothing like the big infrastructure.
It would be nice to take them down.
The big infrastructure project is our highways. If you think about that, is that self-driving cars and stuff like that, we're not going to need nearly as much capacity on the roads as we currently
do. We need our bridges fixed in most cases.
Yeah, well, that's not going to happen too fast with Kronos Hades coming.
No.
The poor governments. They're not going to do too well.
There's something I was going to ask you earlier, I can't remember what it was.
But your point was the financial end of things is
reasonable.
Still good?
Well, it's good worldwide. But what happens in the U.S. is another story.
If we lose the reserve currency.
Yeah, if we lose the reserve status in our currency or mismanagement in our currency starts going on, that's bad. And plus, well, it was a very telling thing with GM the other day. GM came out with their corporate earnings of $2.5 billion, and they have no debt. They're pure money. And at the same day, they announced, they have, at the same time, at the same, boy, I'm getting invaded. At the same time, on airplane mode, they announced that they want to lay off 18,000 white-collar workers, one-third of their workforce. And Mary Barrera, the CEO, basically explained it this way. She said, we're making more money per car, so much more profitable, but where the trade is going, the tariffs and everything else, we've got to get prepared. We expect to see a big downturn in manufacturing. So they're ready. But a company like Chrysler, they're not ready. Poor Ford. Ford's in real trouble. And that's one of the things that's happening at this point in time. It has to do with corporate bonds. And we'll talk about that in a minute. But we got to get everybody in. We're starting up.
So GM's not looking to sell many cars in China, is what I'm saying.
No, GM is making more profit per car, but they don't see any expansion of the business. They see contracting.
Yeah.
Just in general.
Well, they were trying to get into China big time, but I think
the tariffs are probably a mess. You got to remember, they're a metals company. All they do is buy metal and transform it. So that's 25% is just got a charge against themselves, you know. But I think they're looking at it. I think they're looking at other stuff with that. Okay. All right, we all set. We're gonna start up. We're gonna start up again. Last call. All right, we left off. To go off to have a break, and where we left off, we were looking at the 90-degree dial of the world horoscope, and still up on the screen here, and we were talking about some of the combinations that are going on in the micro pictures. So the big pictures are really pretty, the little pictures aren't so pretty, which goes with Tom Waits' quote, the big print giveth and the small print taketh away. And it's really true on this particular thing. Now, a few things to note. I mentioned that Cupido is crossing the cardinals. Isn't that nice?
Yeah.
Uranus is crossing into a sign. Saturn is going to cross at the end of the year into a new sign. Admetos just crossed into a new sign. Jupiter just crossed into a new sign. And by the end of the year, we'll be crossing into Capricorn as well. The only one that isn't going to change right now is Pluto and Neptune, and they get their due in a couple of years themselves. They're going to all change signs. So, again, the world is changing. The boomers are going to go away rapidly. The millennials are going to really firmly come into the mainstream of things.
What do you mean the boomers are going to go away rapidly?
We're going to go away rapidly. Our effect. You know, Pluto isn't in Leo anymore. You know.
I know, but I want to stay around a little longer.
Yeah, the effectiveness that will diminish over time.
Yeah.
But there is a definite changing of the guard in general in the world. On a lot of different cultural levels, more so than in many, many years. Now, the other thing that's going to occur this year is Saturn's going to cross Kronos three times. So that's going to be difficult. Governments are going to have to come up with resources that aren't going to be available. But Saturn Kronos also, it means the old ruler or the old dictator. But it also has to do with great personages. When we were growing up in the 70s, there was a period of time when a whole generation went away. All the Marx Brothers, all the great actors and actresses from the 30s and the 40s started passing away in great numbers. And the guys like Jimmy Durante and, you know, Perry Como, all these kinds of characters that we associated with our parents' view of the world, they all passed away at once. It was a thing. But then there was a fallow period where not too many old personages passed away. We're coming into one of the periods where a lot of folks are going to go away that are going to be representative of an older culture. Right? And all at once, they're all going to, and it's already started. That's the Kronos Saturn business. say the losses of authorities, the losses of sovereign persons, leading and independent persons are hindered, high age, old masters, long time duration, late fulfillment or accomplishments, principal formula for the great landowner or great obstructions, formula for the needy, that kind of stuff. So it's this idea that we're going to see governments having to have resources, lots of old folks going away, this idea of dealing with the elderly in general becomes an issue, much like the Hades Saturn was an issue with the immigrants, mm-hmm. with the immigration thing. Now, the Saturn is past the Hades. He's not coming back, but the Saturn's going to play with the Kronos, and he's going to go Antistria Neptune, right? So we're going to get the picture of Saturn and Neptune standing on the cardinals as well in this era, during this period. And Saturn and Neptune standing on the cardinals has to do with sickness, pestilence, treacherous diseases of long duration, matters that last a long time, chronic conditions, habits, etc. Which is why I said we've got several indicators here for pandemics. There's several indicators for situations where people find that their immune system has dropped for one reason or another, right, on a more mass scale. So while the flu season is one thing, I have a feeling we're probably going to see more Ebola cases arising in various parts of Africa that are going to be difficult to extinguish. We're going to see longer-term illnesses coming out of, like, wildfires in Europe and in California, and that sort of stuff, lung issues and whatnot will start coming out there. Because Jupiter Mercury is pulmonary. Jupiter Mercury is like I mentioned, it's diarrhea of the mouth, but it's also, and too many good ideas, but it also rules the functioning of the lungs. So it's pulmonary in general. With Pluto there, death through a pulmonary conditions, because Pluto isn't always good. As a matter of fact, Pluto is rarely good.
Come on.
It has its problems. But Pluto and Zeus is extremely good for manufacturing. So if we probably take a look at that one, this is a nice one to look at. You know, it's increase of efforts, increase of accomplishments, attending to duty, to do something new, you know, and sort of think, come on, I'm better than that.
What about dementia?
So,
pardon?
What about
dementia? Dementia is important right now because Mercury is stationing with Neptune. So everybody's nuts. That's why I said I can say anything I want today. But Mercury Neptune is not that much of a dementia kind of a combination. It just means it's an ephemeral combination. But people have too many ideas and they're shallow, essentially because of it. It's a tough thing to put it, but. You know, most Mercury Neptunes have the intellectual depth of a city puddle, but they're wide. It's a big puddle. They have a lot of ideas. You know, something has to stick. It is good fortune in communications. It means the small animals do good. You know, little critters do well with this combination. Children do well with this combination. So we have some nice things going on here. If we take Jupiter with Venus, we're getting Poseidon with Mercury. And so Jupiter-Venus is, you know, too much is not enough. It's a, you know, it's a happy combination. Mercury-Poseidon is to be very cultured in one's outlook, more cultured in one's communications. Mercury-Poseidon is educational outlooks or educational communications. See, ideas, thoughts, spiritualized thinking, mental or spiritual perception, the ideas of the generality, right? We get the idea that this is like a social part of things, and it stands with Kronos. So again, we do have good ideas coming out of the institutions. We do have good ideas in what they want to do. Do they have the resources to do it? That's the issue. Is there enough? Are the resources in the right spot? Now, also, Venus and Pluto, right, is running with Zeus and Poseidon. So, and it runs with the midheaven of the U.S. And Venus and Pluto is always obsessional. I mean, it knows what it wants. The image of Venus and Pluto is the little kid with his nose pressed up against the glass of a pet store looking at the sick puppy, you know, that kind of thing. And, you know, I want it. And it's all about the chase. Another image is the cat running after the mouse. When he catches the mouse, he plays with it and plays with it until, oh, it's dead. Well, I guess I'll eat it now. But it isn't the idea of wanting to eat the mouse. It's the idea of playing, the interplay. Right. With Zeus and Poseidon is the highly creative culture, highly creative spiritual thinking. It also is a military culture, too. There's some of that going on with Poseidon and Zeus. But as the general world witnesses something that must prove something, must show its conviction, must be ready to testify, mental dispositions to be mentally influenced and impressed by others, the creative mentality, mental leadership. It goes on and on and on. Let's see if we can get this thing. Leave the rest. Here we go. Oh, there we go. Oh. Okay, mental disposition. Define the evidence. So here we see this idea that there's this obsession with mental excellence or mental or spiritual excellence, right? Or to communicate about these things. All very nice. And it stands with Apollon, which makes it widespread. Very, very nice. So these are good things that are going on. The Neptune itself is running in half square with Uranus, right? And you'll notice that it runs locally with the MC of Jupiter and Mercury, right? This picture here. This is a large scandal. This is, well, first of all, Neptune-Uranus has to do with funerals, mortuaries, the transition into the beyond. It's where they say he died suddenly. That's Uranus-Neptune. Yeah. Right, mental was where the motor, the electromotor function stops. Whereas with Mars Saturn, it's where the heart stops or the muscle condition stops. But Neptune and Uranus is even a stronger indicator of death in a horoscope. And here we have it running with Mercury, Jupiter, and the meridian for the U.S. So it means that here be scandals, and it's a prophetic thing because you see. In the movement of these combinations, Jupiter is going to come up and hit Neptune three times in the course of this year. And this is one of the other important tells of the year. Listen, Jupiter-Neptune puts a lot of people out of business. Jupiter-Neptune is one of the lottery combinations. Uranus and Jupiter is the guy who wins the lottery. Neptune and Jupiter is the money that the lottery has. Right. Neptune and Jupiter is widespread money. It's inflation. It rules massive inflation. It also rules massive fraud. All right. Now, one of the conditions of Jupiter and Neptune is inflation occurs, interest rates go up consequently for it, bubbles form economically, but there's a shortage of money. The problem with Jupiter and Neptune is you expand so fast you don't have enough resources to cover your obligations, right? It's because it's fast expansion, fast growth. And essentially, you know, when we fell in 2009, when the world fell because the U.S. banks were slicing and dicing up derivatives, right? They were essentially, you know, in a nutshell, we were selling, taking 10 mortgages, of which 3 were bad and 7 were good, mixing them together as an index and selling portions of that off to the world. But what they didn't count on was that those 3 bad debts would poison the rest and make the entire thing unprofitable for everybody who bought in. Hence, they all lost confidence, that point, and we have a collapse. So it takes us now 9 years. Actually, it was like, yeah, 7 years, 9 years, to build out of this, right, through austerity and that sort of stuff, funding organizations and things that would have gone out of business otherwise, until we get to the election, and the tax cut that was passed through wasn't really a necessary thing because its net effect was to heat up the economy. So instead of the economy being on this nice trajectory of a simmer, right, it's boiling, and it's really boiling. And there's danger of the water boiling away or overcoming the pot, boiling over the pot. And this is why I was just mentioning to somebody about, like, GM turned in a $2.5 billion profit, but at the same time they're going to lay off one-third their white-collar workers, essentially. And it's because they foresee that the current expansion can't continue and it's going to have to come to an end. So one way or another, things are going to inflate. So Jupiter-Neptune is going to come in. The picture of Jupiter-Neptune is Snow White's apple. It looks great on the outside, but there's a rotten worm on the inside. Right? So things look, again, the image of the world looks good, but the interior is not very good. Don't bite that apple. It will be poisonous. Right? So if we look at the picture of Jupiter and Neptune itself, right, it tells us here, shortage of money, money losses, easily acquired money, happy mood, right? People with Jupiter and Neptune combinations win at lotteries and that sort of stuff. But they don't have any idea where the money comes from or where it goes. Jupiter and Neptune, I have no clue. You know, what is it? It was in the cartoon the other day where a guy made a pie chart of hard work was a little sliver for success in life, and the rest of it was dumb luck. And his buddy went by and says, well, you got the first part right, meaning the dumb, you know. Jupiter Neptune is dumb luck. Jupiter Neptune is like, how the hell did that guy get all that money? And he can't even tie his shoelaces. You know, that's Jupiter Neptune. But then again, boy, he squandered it all. This guy had it all, and now he owes the banks everything. How did you get him to find your way to the gutter, you know? Jupiter Neptune is old demon alcohol, sad memories I can't recall, you know? It has to do with squandering, with the losses of things because it's falling through the cracks. The bucket has holes in it, but there's water pouring in the bucket all day long. That's Jupiter Neptune. And when you need it, and you take the water, and you got to throw it on the fire, it all leaked out. And you have nothing. Jupiter Neptune. Jupiter Neptune rules scandals on a large scale. So we're going to see that. So we look at the midpoint of Jupiter and Neptune, which is also Mercury Neptune. So lies, damned lies, and bigger ones. Right? Stands with Mars and Admetos. Now, Mars and Admetos, and it stands with Jupiter it stands with Apollon and Pluto. Now, Pluto and Apollon, let's put it this way. If you start in the ground floor of a pot business right now, you're going to make some money with this combination. Because Jupiter and Neptune would be the drugs themselves, right, or the substance, right? And Pluto and Apollon means small start, big finish. Right? Jupiter Apollon, the image of Jupiter Apollon is the chessboard where every single square doubles the money. And if you start off with a penny, you wind up a billionaire by the time that it all logistically works out. So Jupiter Neptune is something that my old teacher, Hans Nigemann, used to always look for success. Because it means continually, over again, it doubles again, it doubles again, it doubles again, it doubles again. But it starts very small, very tiny. So here we see the idea of a massive inflation that starts very small, very innocuously. We got the idea of a big scandal that starts very small, or a big lie that starts very small, because it gets out of hand, right? And particularly in manufacturing, because Zeus is involved. So Zeus and Apollon have to do with big manufacturing changes. The Mars Admetos is the particularly interesting part, because one of the things about Mars and Admetos is every time Mars connects with Admetos, the markets go to shit. You can bank on that, and you can trade on that, literally. We've looked at it long enough. And Mars Admetos brings a trading halt at all times, particularly to the U.S. market, to the what we call the Buttonwood chart, which is the chart of the U.S. stock market. And as a matter of fact, Mars is going to be hitting Admetos over the next couple of days, so the market's going to open up down at the beginning of the week. And that's why it lost 600 points this week alone. And so it's Mars Admetos. And so Mars Admetos is the end of a market motion or problems in a market motion. So this is a picture that describes a worldwide scandal that has to do with massive marketing that comes to a complete halt, stops in its dead in its tracks. Now, in terms of things we could see as precursors, because remember, this all starts December 21st, but we're seeing it coming into play. Precursors would be like the Juul vaporizers. Right, where the federal government was going to say, we're going to put you right out of business unless you do something. So they immediately said, okay, we're not going to sell flavored inserts anymore and keep the kids away. They had to, or else they'd be out of business overnight. Mm-hmm. Right? So it's a perfect example where here's a company that's on track to make $1.5 billion, and they had to basically, they're going to be cutting back their profits probably by two-thirds.
What's a flavored insert?
The kids want to smoke them all.
Oh.
You know what I mean? They want to have Girl Scout cookies.
The
vaporizers. Okay. Yeah, the vapor.
It's disgusting.
Yeah. So, but again, it's a Jupiter-Neptune thing. It's the harming of the lungs. You remember Mercury, Jupiter's lung, yeah. Pulmonary, with Neptune, illness in pulmonary, starts small, gets big, has to do with market forces. Not a great idea. And the fact that the Jupiter is going to hit the Neptune three times during the course of the year. And when is that going to occur? Let's get our notes out here. The first Jupiter-Neptune hit is going to be at the end of December, right? Which is, you can see it coming up into play there, right? And then our second Jupiter-Neptune hit is going to be at the first couple of weeks in June, right? Is it? Yeah. No, sorry. Yeah, first week of June there. Last hit before the Jupiter leaves will be in the end of September, the end of August and the beginning of September. So that's the period where inflation takes root the next year, right? Because we're going to see large inflation. And why are we seeing large inflation? Because trades are accelerating because the markets are all heated up beyond their sustainability. Now, in places like China, right, what is going to happen here is China is heavily, heavily extended in terms of debt to cities. Right? They've built cities that are uninhabited because they've loaned unscrupulous guys tons of state money to do these things. So there's a lot of fraud that's gone on in China. And that's all going to come to bear. This is why the Chinese can't make the renminbi their currency, the reference currency in the world. It's not too stable. The country isn't as stable as it looks. All of that expansion is built on borrowed coin. And now they're trying to borrow money to build out infrastructure projects in other countries. And they're not going to be able to sustain this either. So there's big issues there with sustain. The other part of the Neptune-Jupiter is Brexit and its effect on Europe and what's going to happen there. Should any kind of modified Brexit come across, right, all of England's going to pay dearly and for very little growth. A good example is they have a fish market and the town is just known entirely for this fish market. There's no more local fish. So it's been processing all the fish from the EU. And the minute the things are up, it's no longer profitable for EU countries to send their stuff up there. The entire city is going to be unemployed overnight. It's not Glasgow. It starts with a G. It's on the east coast of Britain. But this is the kind of situation. Now, the other thing about this inflationary thing has to do with other precursors that are happening, like Toys R Us. Now, you should get a good understanding of what actually happened with Toys R Us, because Toys R Us was a highly profitable company. They had a great cash flow. They were making lots of money, and they went out of business. And the reason they went out of business is because the corporate board went and took on notes. They took on loans and then distributed the loans as bonuses to their white-collar workers and as add-ons, as dividends for the stockholders. With the idea that these were also going to increase market share and they'd have no problem paying it back, why not take the profits early? That is the thinking there. And of course, what happened was it just got to the point where the bank said, we're not going to give you any more money because you won't be able to pay it back, even though it was a highly profitable company. Home Depot is similar, and so is Lowe's. And Lowe's is the one that's actually strangling back. Home Depot always makes money. Oh, it's Cisco, always makes money. Yet their stocks trade lower because of the fear that they're going to bond themselves to death. And this is a problem. This is similar to the derivative problem that was occurring in the early 2000s, where here is a situation where companies are getting hollowed out. In Massachusetts alone, Papageno's and D'Angelo's, parent company went out overnight. If you go to the Cape Cod Mall, the D'Angelo's thing, they didn't even bother to put the metal thing down. They're still up. With today's soup, stuff in the refrigerator and just abandon. And say, oh, with a little sign up. Say, oh, well, we're not going to reopen now. And that's it. And that's what happened to all these places, because it's like one day they went to the bank and says, well, you're going to roll over the note. And the bank says, no, we're calling it. Mm-hmm. You know? And it's like, oh. And it's not like these companies aren't profitable. They don't take out these notes unless they know they're going to be able to pay them back, unless, of course, something intervenes. These are canaries in the coal mine. Because much like the mortgage fiasco, slicing and dicing the mortgages led to a situation, these bond markets are doing the same thing, right? And the problem is the Feds are going to start raising the rates. The Feds have to raise the rates. And the reason the Feds have to raise the rates is because they burned it all out fighting the last downturn. So they have to get their interest rates up so they can actually have some room to wiggle and tighten and pull. Right now, it's all wide open. So what happens when the Feds raise the rates? Money supply dries up. Mm-hmm. Right now, we have very free money. You can go to the bank and get a loan. You won't be able to. So that's the second effect of the Neptune-Jupiter business that's going to be happening.
How are the banks going to do in that?
The banks have severe problems because as institutions, they're facing the gun as well with the Saturn Kronos coming up. So the banking structures have to fundamentally transform. Now, to talk about that, I got to go back in time a little bit to introduce something I was going to introduce a little bit later, but we'll start talking about now, and that is that Jupiter is going to hit that Neptune three times, going to cross over the cardinal axis, right? And then it's going to come down and it's going to hit Pluto three times, and then swing out and conjoin Saturn before it goes off on its merry way. The first part is the inflationary and tightening of the money supply. The second part is the Jupiter-Pluto conjunctions, which is actually very good in the long run. This begins to repair the problems that the Saturn-Pluto conjunction are going to bring. Now, we've got to go back to 1947 and 1948, right? This is two Saturn-Pluto conjunctions ago. What occurred at that point in time? We were in the post-World War II. The IMF, the International Money Exchange, right? The Bretton Woods agreements all came to play. The UN gets started. The partitioning of all the states, like Vietnam and North Korea. Mao's China pushes the peanut into Taiwan, right? Big transformations going on, and the Iron Curtain comes down. Boom. Right? Everything gets polarized, black or white. There's no in the middle, right? And we get the banking structures we're still living under today comes out of this. The United States dollar becomes the world reference currency. The previous reference currency was the British pound. So the British get tossed in the garbage. Right. So, big transformation in that period of time. And it's kind of a dry time culturally. You know, I think The Thin Man by Orson Welles is a great example of the blandness of that era. Because this is, you know, takes place in Vienna and it's about, you know, spies and guys shooting each other. It has no meaning to anything today. And it's this very austere film. It was an austere period. Right? We get to 1980, 81, 82 period. We get the next Jupiter-Saturn conjunction, right? And in this era here, the polarization is the fact that we have such a split between Jimmy Carter and Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan is the first guy to bring the evangelicals in as a political force. But the more important thing is it's the banking effect or change that occurs in this era. Volcker comes in, we had rampant inflation, ramps it up. He turns the interest rates up to double digits, triple digits, right, basically, and dampens all trading down, dampens everything down, causes a recession, which actually is in effect a restart. Right? But the important thing that occurs in that era, coming in the late 70s, into that era, is the IRA. Now, this was a Republican attempt to get back at Roosevelt for putting in Social Security in the first place. the idea of taking the pension liability out of the institutional's hands and putting it in the individual's hands, right? Which is, you know, your typical libertarian-style thinking, where it's like, well, you know, I'm a rugged guy from the West, and I'll be able to make my own fortune, you know? And if everybody else fails, it's because they suck, you know? And I'm great, and I can do this, you know, kind of thing. And the IRA, though, has this very perverse effect that we're living with to this day. And it's a horrible effect. First of all, it does displace all foreign investment in the United States, right? In other words, the first place pension fund managers go is safe returns. They buy U.S. Treasuries, safe return. But the second thing it is that it takes the decision-making for the development of these funds out of your hands. Literally, actually, out of the hands of pension fund managers that were looking out for the interests of the corporation, right? And puts it in your hands. Oh, you're even stupider than those guys. At least those guys were getting a salary professionally for figuring out what to do with the money. What you're doing now is now giving your rights to that money to a third party who's investing those funds for you, and they, under the aegis of a cafeteria plan coming out of the corporation, and what are they handing you is they're handing you a Chinese menu of A, B, or C. You can't go and invest in what you want to with the IRAs. You can only invest in what you're given choices to. Those choices are determined by these pension guys who no longer have a vested interest in the corporation that previously was sponsoring these things. In fact, they have no vested interest at all except to make trades. The only way companies make money taking care of your funds is trading your funds so they can make the spiff off of each trade. Well, that means that there is nobody sitting there minding the store, so to speak, right? The reason that all of these kinds of indexing concepts came about was because of all the panics worldwide since the introduction of market technology in the 1700s. Once markets started happening, the Buttonwood tree chart, they started trading stocks and shares or paper representing holdings in other companies, and this became legal and became more and more manifest. There were panics every couple of years, every 6 years or 7 years or so. There'd be a panic, right? Some guy would overbuy something and he'd have to start selling it really fast, and everybody start thinking, oh my God, the market's falling apart. They'd sell all their shares, right? Everybody drop out of the market. Well, if you were managing your own money and you were in a panic, you wouldn't buy shares in a dropping market. You wait for the market to get so low that it's irresistible. You'd be silly not to buy in, right? You know, the shares of a company that previously was $100 is now $20. Oh, my God, it's a great bargain. Let me get in there. I'll own a piece of this railroad. I'll own a piece of this canal, right? And that's the way it would work. So markets would naturally gravitate down to the lowest common denominator before they pick up again. But ever since the IRA, the first correction was in 1987, right? And that correction was so severe. It was so severe, it was still the steepest drop of any market we've seen before or since, right? The thing went down 1,000 points instantly, boink, and percentage was like a 30% drop. But it recovers within a couple of months with no ripple effect on the markets at all. That was discernible. And they said, well, it must have been a glitch. It was a panic buy, and it was a stupid one, but technically it picked up and all jazz. No, it was a precursor to what happened in 2009. Right? And basically what happens here in 1987 is the markets were still manually operated, but were going on automatic. And the trades just kept trading right into a down market, and pushing the market down further and further and further, till finally it doesn't hit a bottom, per se. It spiked down and spiked up. So what happened was all primitive programs just started buying at that point, and then buying and buying and buying. The thing was, the money never stopped, and it should have. It should have. So in 2009, right, and we have the meltdown in 2009, the market should have dropped to 3,300. They stopped at 66. Now, as astrologers, we're looking at this thing. It's supposed to go down to 3,000. It's supposed to hit the bottom at 3,000. It's not. How come has it stopped? How come it's slowing down at 7,000? Right? And the reason was because they were treating it, they were treating this fire with a hose filled with gasoline. Mm-hmm. And they just kept pouring money in and pouring money in. It was not their money. They did not give a shit. It was your money that got lost in that stuff. Now, that forced the markets up, but it forced the markets up artificially. The market shouldn't be where they are now because of what happened then. They should be much more prudent. They should be more volatile, etc., because these should be natural market forces there. There aren't. It's artificial. Right? You talk about fake news? No. Fake markets. Yeah. There's fake markets because the only incentive is to trade to make the money on the trades. The guys that are handling that money only make money when they trade the money. So they don't care. It's not their money. I got to make my Christmas present, and I got to make my bonus. I don't give a shit if I lose $2 million of somebody's pension money. Right? So that's an artificial thing. This led to the decline of the savings and loans. Now, when that savings and loan fiasco occurred, and again, because the savings and loans were too tied up in markets that were volatile, and they had overlent, they could not get that bad loan, because, again, nobody's minding the store. When that occurred, this was a fundamental banking change. Previously, savings and loans were institutions that the local neighborhood would pay out to. You know, it's a wonderful life, you know. Yeah. What's his name?
Jimmy Stewart's
a bank, right? They'd pay into that, and that would be the money that they would use to make loans to the community to buy houses. Commercial banks didn't give a shit about the community. They're just there to service industry and make sure that credit moves around, right? So when all the savings and loans went under, we lost touch with the institutional use of our money. That all of a sudden allowed organizations like Countrywide Mortgage and Loan to arise. National organizations didn't give a shit where your house is as long as it fits certain guidelines. No knowledge of your neighborhood. And that's why in this modern era, a bank like Cape Cod 5 does so well. Because there are so few organizations like a Cape Cod 5. You know, actual community banks. Because this was destroyed. So now we're coming to the next Saturn and Pluto conjunction. There's going to be a fundamental change in the banking structures and the institutional structures. A lot of people think it's an extremely destructive change because the Pluto is in Capricorn, which is Saturn's home. Now, in 1947, the Pluto was in Leo. Pluto doesn't like being in Leo that much, but it likes the drama.
Yeah.
Saturn hates being in Leo. So Saturn had his arm forced. The IMF and all these other institutions, it becomes a polarized time. We get to the Reagan one, right, and it's coming on. It's happening in Libra, right? It happens in Libra, the Saturn. So Saturn's exalted in Libra, has a good time there, felt better about it. Pluto's just not a party person. You know, Pluto wants to go his own way, and being in Libra is very disconcerting for Pluto. Then he went into Scorpio, and he was real happy to get all the sex offenders out and stuff like that, and child molestation and all that sleazy shit, right? But now, Pluto is in Saturn's house, and he's very uncomfortable there. It's a very dry place. There's not a lot going on. Boring. And Saturn, all he's doing now is applying to the Pluto. And when a planet is applying, it's going towards, right? And call it applying. And the energy that happens when something is applying like that is sometimes stronger than the actual hit, because it sets everything up for it. So the change in institutions is going to be a change where the institutions are cut back, not expanded, right? Or dismantled. Right, so we're not coming into a time of expansion of institutional, but the cutting back of such things. It's right afterwards that Jupiter hits the Pluto, and things begin to grow again. So this is going to be a short... Everybody's focused on that Saturn-Pluto as being like the end of something, and that's it. But they're forgetting that Jupiter is following it. And planets keep the flavor of the last thing that hit them. It's like when you chew gum. You know, the flavor stays in your mouth after you spit the gum out until you eat something else. And it's the same thing with planets. So the last thing that will have hit Pluto will have been Saturn. It acts like Saturn for a while until the Jupiter hits it. So it's not going to have to be chewing on Saturn very long at all. Right now, the Pluto is still dealing with Uranus. It's still dealing with revolutionary change. Okay, fundamental revolutionary change, which is ephemeral. It doesn't have a great depth to it. All right, so that Jupiter coming up, big deal during the course of this year, hits three times, is a setup, it's an inflationary setup, and money starts drying up like crazy after the first of the year, and then next year, at the end of the year, right, the scandals will all have hit home, because that's the other part, the Jupiter-Neptune's worldwide scandals. We are not the only country that has really screwy things going on in the courts, all right? The rest, you think of the situation going on in Saudi Arabia, right, is more about money than anything else. It isn't about killing a journalist and, oh, our First Amendment rights. There is no First Amendment in the world, you know, and this guy's a king who makes his own laws. The thing that's all pissed off is that Turkey's mad that it happened on their territory. But if they had gotten Khashoggi into Saudi Arabia and publicly executed him, who would have given a shit except his soon-to-be wife and family, right? And Washington Post are mad because they lost their columnist. But this was done on foreign soil. This was an international incident. The thing is that it's the exception that we're making noise about it as opposed to being the reality of the thing. So we're in a circumstance where big scandals like this are worldwide. Guys like Duarte killing off half the population. Anybody in a neighborhood could say, "I got to deal drugs." This in the hit squad out for him. You don't like somebody? That's how you did it. No, we'll get rid of these people. I don't like. Just tell the police. You know, that's what they're doing, and that's what's going on in the Philippines, and mass right now. And this is happening in other places as well. The idea that somebody can use WhatsApp in India. And target people by just starting a rumor about them. They use WhatsApp. You get a rumor going and the town comes and lynches the person. So it's not something that's unique to the U.S. This nationalist fervor is not unique to the U.S. You know, we just happen to have a stupid one instead of a smart one. But then again, Duarte isn't that smart either. Kim Jong-un is not very smart. He's not a bright guy. He had a good education in Switzerland, but then you look at other things like, you know, doing stuff like using an anti-aircraft cannon to blow someone's brains out isn't a very good idea in a public stadium. You know, so you get these people are some, or killing off his half-brother in a goddamn airport, you know, it's like, you could do better than that if you're going to knock people off. So this is going on all over. There are more strong men coming up. Guys in Africa, Africa is particularly at peril because Africa is the last wild place, so to speak, as far as the Western world is concerned. And I'll tell you, Africa has the most potential of all the continents for remaking the world because they don't have to take apart a broken infrastructure. You know, they can start with all the new technologies. I mean, all you need in a village is a couple of solar panels and a Wi-Fi connection, you know, satellite Wi-Fi connection, and you're as modern as any place else in the world, you know. So the fact that we have cars and concrete out there with 100-year-old pipes in the ground and stuff like that, you know, we're like Rome after the Huns came, you know. And so who's going to fix all this stuff? It's a harsh thing. So we don't have, you know, we have an infrastructure problem. But the infrastructure problem is that the other countries that were second world countries and third world countries get the leapfrog. That's because they don't have an infrastructure problem because they have no infrastructure, you know. And it gets interesting. So Africa has the most promise for leading the world in the future because they have tons of materials, resources, still have great fertile growing ground, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, right? I mean, it's all backward and untouched. And as they get smarter, they'll do this. And my daughter, Renata, she works for a seed company in Amsterdam, over in the Netherlands. And she's a seed researcher. And she represents the farmer class, The other guys that are researching represent the corporate classes and stuff like that. And, of course, the Dutch are extremely involved in seeds. They're a big deal, right? And they want to dominate the world with it. But they don't get it that there are indigenous things. So she goes down to Africa, right, and goes to Zimbabwe, and she's talking to the local collective there, and they don't want to give over any information whatsoever. And it's like, no way. You guys are going to go and exploit it and this and that. We want to keep our stuff here, and we're going to exploit it. And the Dutch, she brought the information up. The Dutch didn't know what to do with this. You mean we're the bad guys? Yeah, you're the bad guys, you know? And it's a similar kind of a thing where down there in Africa, now they've got these indigenous seeds. They've got the original stock for all this stuff. They're not giving it out. Right? It's the women that are doing this, by the way, because the guys are all fighting in the wars. Right, and they're going to do quite well later on. They're going to have these materials that aren't there. Currently, it's really bad. They're exploited. They're children, and they're getting beat up by their parents, and it's a terrible thing. So we're going to see these things going on there where we're going to see a fundamental change in the way the institutions are structured, and it's going to be harsh, and it's going to be sharp, and it's going to be hurtful. When it occurs, that's next January. And you'll see the precursors leading up to it. But then afterwards, the Jupiter-Pluto comes in, and nobody's going to want the solutions at all. But like having to eat the castor oil, it'll be good for you. You'll have to take the medicine, and you'll have to go through what it says to go through. So again, this is this year where we're in between two worlds, and in truth, the Saturn has yet to establish itself. So this year, as it goes on, is a very inflationary year, a very scandal-ridden year. You're going to see more lawsuits coming out of the woodwork for everything than you've seen before. And in all areas, pharmaceuticals, people in power, industrialists, etc., etc. I mean, the Me Too movement and stuff like that was very critical, but now it's the tribal movement. Now it's different. Okay, the Me Too movement and stuff like that started this idea of litigation, but once it gets to a tribal level, it's going to get very serious.
Gary, won't Jupiter coming in Neptune really affect the pharmaceutical industry?
Yes. They're going to make shitloads of money and buckets of money at the same time as drying up. So it's a problem. Again, too much excess in any given direction creates a bubble and gets noticed. And all the excesses of this year that are coming all get dealt with in a year and a quarter when the Saturn-Pluto hits. It's like sudden sky comes along and stops it all. And says, wait a minute, this is ridiculous. We have to do something else. Now, I see the U.S. elections that just occurred dovetailing with this chart because of the idea that it's a positive change that the populists have come into play. In other words, the only branch of government that actually represents the popular vote is the House of Representatives. The Senate used to be approved by the state legislatures until late in the last century, where it began to be a popular thing. But the idea of voting somebody in for 6 years means there's a six-year lag in terms of the changeover. And the president is elected by the Electoral College, which is, again, indirect representation of the people. Obviously, we've seen two elections come by where the guy that lost had more popular votes than the guy that won because of where those votes occurred and how it affected the Electoral College. So only the House of Representatives is truly the people's vote, so to speak. And it's always the precursor to what's happening next. So the fact that a lot of women, minorities, and whatnot in the U.S. Election got into play is probably the Jupiter and Pluto. And the Pluto-Zeus is going to be edicts coming from both sides. Both sides of the political debate are going to be creating laws that are capricious, that are just out of the blue, some of them very good, some of them absolutely ridiculous. But one after the other, be prepared. You're going to see more of that stuff, more legalities coming down than you've ever seen before in your life. And I don't say it in hyperbole or exaggeration. Zeus and Mercury and Zeus are literally that. So the courts are going to get red hot, but the courts are going to try and do the right thing. Doesn't matter whether they're Republican or Democrat or orange or green, they're all going to try and do the good thing because of the Jupiter-Pluto. They'll try. Doesn't mean they pull it off. Doesn't mean people don't suffer because of it and things like that. Okay, let's get a look at the world. Let's drop this out of here and drop this out of here. Okay, now note that, we got to get this. Oh, is it going to have to do displayed lines again? Sorry about that, guys.
Wait, don't you want this?
Yeah, I want the other guys. I want the displayed points. Here we go. I've got to save them, you know? Get rid of that.
You didn't.
I didn't save them.
You didn't get rid of
it. Oh, I didn't?
No.
Oh, yeah. Oh, because it's using solar fire points. Stop that.
Mm-hmm.
Turn that off. Turn that on. Very good. Notice Hades, Saturn, and Kronos. Notice they cross over Washington. Right? So if I open the map here, was it the do I have the right thing on here? Here we go. You'll notice here, right? There's Washington, Alexandria, Virginia, right? Washington area, right? And we got the Hades crossing right over it. And there's the Saturn on the D7th house cusp. But notice Kronos goes right through the middle of New Jersey. What is the Kronos going over in the middle of New Jersey?
House.
Trump's house in New Jersey.
Is it?
Yes, it's going to make more edicts from there, yeah. And we have Mars coming down over Connecticut and Vermont and Burlington, Vermont, and that sort of stuff. Just like a lot of work. You know, there's a big campaign going on in Vermont to get people to move to Vermont. You know, they'll give you 10 grand and get you going and stuff, which is cute. I mean, I think that's the Mars trying to get workers there. Pluto is going off to the ocean here. See it? Pluto's off in Maine. And I think Susan Collins might be the last Republican that's holding office right now in Maine.
In New England.
All of New England, yeah. So it's big Pluto stuff going on in there. Let's go back to our map here. Let's go back to our U.S., a standard U.S. map. Here we go. All right. Now, also note here, too, that we've got Venus, right, running right off the coast. But just inland is Admetos. Notice Admetos skirts all the things up through Seattle, right? Goes through Phoenix and Las Vegas, and then right out here, this is where the resort areas are in Mexico and stuff and going out. Admetos is standstill, death, destruction, horrible things. Transiting Jupiter goes right through San Francisco and right through Portland and right through Seattle. So Seattle's going to be okay about everything. Portland is going to get a real good bump. San Francisco is going to do pretty good. It's going to be a social place to be. But you just go inland a little bit, and you're getting all this Admetos. And this Admetos is not a very good thing. It does have to do with bringing things to a standstill, freezing things. The place of the country that does really well is dead center. You notice where they're going to build the wall does pretty well. Because that's the Jupiter and the Mercury. See, it runs right through Colorado and Oklahoma City and stuff like that. And it swings out. So we see this area of the country does pretty good. The emotional center of the country, Omaha, Nebraska, Kansas City, Jackson, Mississippi, New Orleans, all ruled by the moon. What does that mean? Water, 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 lots of storms. Lots of changing weather, water, water, water. Plus the populist movements get very strong here. Sun Cupido, the idea of the clique or the concept of the tribe is right through the Rust Belt. So all the places that basically went to the right really are in this little band here, and it makes sense. And yet, they'll probably be the nicest folks on the planet. They'll invite you into their homes, feed you food, and all. Because San Cupido is extremely helpful that way. San Cupido makes you part of the clan, and not the KKK, sometimes. And we have Neptune, right, going right through Miami, along with the Cupido stuff in Jacksonville and in South Carolina, through Charlottesville, North Carolina, Chesapeake, West Virginia. These are places where poisons, there be poisons. There be slimy stuff. There be things that are really scary, right?
Dead pigs.
Dead pigs and dead fish and dead chickens.
Dead chickens.
So is this like the midpoint of next year?
No, this is generally for the whole year, and you already should start seeing it occur. So let's drop our map back a little bit. Let's take another. Kill it. Let's get another map here. Here we go. All right. And I mentioned to you Africa, and now on Africa, it's interesting as well. You see, there's a line coming down here. And another line coming down here, like an envelope. Africa is between Neptune and Zeus. And Neptune and Zeus is a misguided army, an unorganized army. Not very good. Notice that Hades goes right through Cairo. Very poor. A lot of corruption going on there. And the Kronos is going right through Syria. So Syria is kind of on the rise. Saturn goes right through Israel, particularly the Gaza Strip. So that's only going to get worse. Yeah. The fighting in the Gaza is only going to get worse. And also here, you'll notice that Zeus, which rules armies, goes through Somalia. It crosses in South Yemen. So there's going to be a real big difference between Oman and Yemen. Oman gets all the goods, so to speak, right? Oman's got the node, Vulcanus, there's a little bit of Uranus going through. Nice, nice, nice. But this is the war. And this business here, you got Pluto going right through the middle of of Saudi Arabia, which would indicate that the ruler will take over. The king will probably die this year, and MBS will probably fully take over. Notice that in India, we got a very nice picture, very spiritual thing going between Pakistan and India. It looks like the line of demarcation gets a little bit better. Afghanistan starts cutting some deals right now. The whole reason that the Taliban is being such a pain in the ass is because they want to be part of the money that comes out of Afghanistan. Believe me, it's all about corruption and money. It has nothing to do with the religious or movement, per se. India, it does. And you'll notice that over here we've got, Admetos runs up through Bangladesh. It's on the corner of Bangladesh and on the corner of Bangladesh and Malaysia. So the deaths with the Muslim refugees is not finished yet. Now in Africa, though, things we need to know is we've got Admetos going through Casablanca in Morocco and going down through the Ivory Coast. This is not a great place, and it goes up through Lisbon as well. So Lisbon is going to be somewhat at a standstill. This is not a happy place. We've got Jupiter and Mercury, however, going in through Algeria, through the capital of Algeria, along with Neptune. Lots of crazy shit going on here. But there's a split. The Upper Volta, this whole region, which is usually fairly poor, you know, they have a lot of resources, but it's fairly poor, does well. They do well. Whereas Neptune is going right down along the coast. Neptune. So Angola, Congo, Cameroon, Nigeria. You know, I wouldn't go there at all. Very bad. The moon goes right down through the middle of this stuff, particularly over here, in that between Angola and Namibia. There's nobody out there. It's Namibia desert. But I guess people will go there to dream. I don't know. Wars in Cape Town or fighting in Cape Town with the Mars. Right through the middle, fighting in Libya over, who's in charge over there. And the western part of it is going to do quite well. The border with Libya and Egypt, it's a nice accommodation going on there. Right? And then we have more wars through Somalia because they have Zeus. We talked about that Zeus already. and Madagascar is going to have to deal with some sort of death issues because of Pluto going through Madagascar and Uranus nearby. So maybe it just gets too weird. I don't know. Take a quick look.
Can you just talk about Botswana and South Africa?
Yes. Okay, in Botswana, South Africa, we've got right in the middle of it, the sun Cupido. So Botswana does very good. Johannesburg is okay. Cape Town is still going to have water issues with the Mars going over, you know, so it's like maybe even fights over water.
They
do have the water problems, but they did get a rain the other day, but it's not enough. Mm-hmm. Hades goes over the eastern end of the country. So it's where Mozambique and South Africa meet, and what is that in the middle of there? What's that? Is it Uganda in there? They have a hard time. Well, that's going to have a hard time. But Botswana is good. And Johannesburg is kind of caught between the poverty of the East and the relative largesse that's coming out of the center of the country. So you've got three energies going on in South Africa, per se. One, center of the country is doing quite well physically. You know, the eastern part should be doing terribly and having problems on the borders with Mozambique and Ghana and stuff. And the western part of the country is either going to have some interesting warfare, either some sort of rebels coming in from Namibia or some crap like that, or just huge fights over Cape Town, you know, over the water. I would assume the water situation. I don't see any other resource that they'd be fighting over down there.
And they have mines there?
The mines are a little bit further north than Cape Town and more towards the center of the country. And that's where things do well. Okay, let's move on to the next section. I keep doing that. Getting charts in a map. Ooh. The next section. And basically, you want to take a quick look at South Asia. Right? And in South Asia, Japan is our character we want to look at. Right over Tokyo comes Hades. Mm-hmm. So there's corruption or real big... This is where the earthquake was, right over here. Mm-hmm. So there's corruption or something going on here, but one way or another, maybe more earth changes. Not a very stable situation. And just offshore is Saturn. So maybe they encounter issues with the fish. I don't know. Toxic fish. But one way or another, we know that here's Indonesia, right? And right where all the earthquakes and everything else have been going on. Actually, over here is where the last ones went, the Subriaya. Or whatever the hell it was. But this archipelago here, this part of it, is screwed. It's got, you know, Hades, Saturn, and Cronus there. And so, therefore, earth movements, ring of fire issues, poverty are all not doing great. Now, the sun and Cupido walk right over the Philippines, right over Manila. Remember, I mentioned that the sun Cupido is nationalistic in general, it is tribal. I think Duarte stays in power. The moon goes over Vietnam, right through Saigon, near Hong Kong, up near Beijing. Right? And the moon means the populace, the people are making noise. It's an emotional or instinctual kind of an energy. So the people have a sense of home during this time, a sense of doing things for their very, very local condition. Now, the Mercury and the Zeus, good trades, cunning trade deals, etc., etc., right? We get it going across the Burma near Bangkok, the Burma Thailand border, up near the northern Vietnam border with Burma and China, right? Mongolia and China. China keeps talking about the Silk Road. These are all places that they're making investments, right? And then we get the Agnitos right here through Bangladesh in Burma next door, and that's, we know that situation is not very, very good or very stable.
So,
I keep doing that.
Okay. Europe.
Europe. not a lot going on in Australia. Let me see. And actually, it's a better European map. Yeah, this one's good. Because this one shows, see, there's that line coming up from Cairo. There's that Hades line, right? And you see it goes through Cyprus, near the Black Sea by Georgia, through Ankara, which is the capital of Turkey. Not good. That's not a very good picture. Mars goes right through Naples, and the moon goes through Rome. So a lot of anger. Probably Sicilians are going to get mad at mainland over some of the immigration policies that are going on. But the moon going over Rome, again, indicates very local rule. You know, the people rule. And they're trying to call themselves nationalists. Neptune, notice that Neptune goes right over Barcelona along with the Mercury and the Jupiter. So all the Catalonians are going to be subject to lies, literally, or propaganda of some sort. Let's get Northern Europe. I do that again. Okay. In Northern Europe, notice that Neptune goes right through London. There's Brexit. There's May going down in flames, scandals to follow, right? Agnitos goes right through the border of North and South Ireland and through Ireland, so we tell us that that's a fundamental place on the planet, or a fundamental change has to happen there. We get over here to the more eastern part of things, and you'll notice that Kronos is pretty close to Moscow. So, you know, our buddy over there might be pulling a lot more strings than we expect. All right, let's get out of here. I do it again. Let's get out of here and finish up on the world. And when we look at the entire world in general, notice that the Cupido sun business goes right over with Mars nearby. Hawaii is a nice place to bring your family, I would assume. South America, Rio de Janeiro is getting the Saturn, the Hades, and the Kronos. And you know what government they've just installed and what they're going to do to the Amazon basin once they get going. Yeah, so that's not so good.
That's it for the world.
Well, if that... Actually, there's a lot more going on the planet than we think. Okay, we're going to move away from the worldview, and we're going to look at some of the planetary action, and then we're going to open up for a few questions.
When I say that, I mean...
I know what you mean.
Okay, what do I mean?
That's the destruction of the world, yeah.
The
get rid of the Amazon.
Right.
Yeah.
Take away the lungs, can't breathe.
Take away the lungs, we can't breathe, is correct. Okay, let's go to dynamics. Let's go to our graphic ephemeris. We've got the Washington thing. We're going to do, let's do the whole year. Let's go with 12/15/2018, and we're going to do 13 months. 13. Yeah, no, it's today. But we're not.
Okay.
Not a lot going on this month, I don't think. If you want to look at the funny Mercury Venus station today. All right, what do we want? We don't need this. We don't need that. We want transits. We want longitude. Right now, outers are good. But let's make another one. Let's edit this thing here, and let's make it select the points. No, we don't want a stinking Chiron. We do want Moon. No, we don't want Moon. That's too much. Sun. We want Sun, Mercury, Venus, and the Mars. And we got the node. And we're good. And we're going to call this GC1. and save it, and select it, and view it. Very good. Now, this colorful little chart here, we're going to be entering this thing in around December 15, right? But here's the thing to look at. Look at the Saturn. Here's the Saturn line. See it? Now, what this is a dynamic graph of the motion of the planets for a year, about a year. This is the how what degree they're at, and this is the date along the top. And we made it into a 45-degree repeating loop so that all the hard aspects stand out. All right, so let's look at Saturn, and we notice that Saturn comes down, it hits the Kronos right around the first of the year, right around Christmas time. When it hits the Kronos, it's also hitting the Sun and Venus. So, beloved people die. You know? People that everybody sort of really likes. Right? Then after it hits the Kronos, right, hell with these little guys, it runs over Admetos. We're not too concerned with that either. But we are concerned with it hitting Zeus and then running, right, with the node. Now, it runs with the node for this entire period. You see it?
Mm-hmm.
So from the middle of April all the way to the middle of September, Saturn is running with the node. Now, in a natal chart, when you see Saturn running with the node between two people, what does it mean?
End of relationship.
End of the relationship. They separate, right? What happens when you meet somebody under Saturn and node?
Long time relationship.
Yeah, but there's a lot of baggage.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right? What happens when you separate with somebody under Saturn and node?
There are problems.
There are problems, but it's a good thing. In other words, the separation should not be argued with. Right? Now, why is it this way with Saturn and the node? Right? Saturn and node is one of those things. People natally with Saturn and node, they don't connect easily. Right? So, they connect with a lot of people. But they don't go that deep, right? The minute that they connect in a very responsible fashion, they really expect you to be there forever.
Mm-hmm.
And should you leave, they're betrayed. They only allow this to happen once. And after that, they get very skitterish and they don't let people in. So to make a connection with a Saturn node person, you have to hang around a long time and let them get over their PTSD about separation.
Mm-hmm.
But they have issues about separation. So what is this going to make for the whole world during that period of time? Lots of family breakups. Lots of ripping apart. Lots of situations where there are issues in the family. There are issues where that aren't easily tractable, so to speak. Particularly, right, here's where it forms in. But then we get this clot over here, right, with Zeus. And with Mars and Mercury and Venus, a lot's going on, right? And that's the May-June period. It's really tough, right? And then the secondary period with Admetos, here's where the deaths begin to occur, or the real strong separations, right? Where we have the Venus, Saturn and the node, and Admetos. These are beloved people going away. Then we have another clot up here, and that's the end of June, the first 2 weeks of July. And we have another clot up here in the first week of August, where, again, lots of family energies, work energies, people were devoted to, they go away. And then finally, right, the last of that energy is going to be in mid-September, where, again, work connections or people through war or situations along that line go away. And then the Saturn starts its run, and here's where it crosses the Pluto, right? See, here's the Pluto line. And there's our one Saturn-Pluto conjunction with the Sun, Venus, Mercury, and Mars all running with it. So one-shot deal.
Yeah.
Notice that as well, that the node, as it moves forward, gets the retrograde of Mercury at its station as well.
Yeah.
So it gets a little healing power afterwards. And then it goes up and crosses Hades and gets shot down right again. So that's the problem. Now, these up and down lines are the retrogrades. So here's Mercury coming down for its next retrograde period, which will start near the end of February and finish up in the middle of March. This is the entire shadow period. Right? That retrograde kicks off Poseidon, and it also, which is the line down here, and it also kicks off Jupiter and Uranus up here. And that will be in mid-March. So we hear very strange ideas at that point in time. Mercury stations again in mid-June of 2019, and it runs with Mars, right, and Apollon. This is a good station. This is a station where energies go well. So the midpoint of June is very, very good energy-wise, even though everybody's freaking out over family separations. Right? July is stations again without much consequence. Next station occurs in third week of October and will happen with Kronos and the node and the Venus. So we get this idea of government edicts or government welfare announcements towards the end of October, and we have the next station is really coming in with Jupiter, Mercury, and Venus in the beginning of November. Now, this one's not really a very big deal at all. Alright? So the big news is, of course, the Saturn running here, right? The other big news is the interplay of Neptune and Uranus all through the year. You notice they just keep on interplaying all throughout the course of the year. So we're still in this crisis of consciousness energy all through the year. As I mentioned to you earlier, Neptune-Uranus is to be checkmated in your brain, have a crisis in consciousness, to suddenly lose motor function, we call it the transition into the beyond, right? Because it rules death that way, you suddenly transition, but also mentally as well, you lose, you know, your ability, your moorings, your capabilities locally.
When is it? Yeah.
That's going to be the Neptune Uranus phase mostly through the course of the year, but it's real strong right now as we speak. It gets real strong again March, April. It gets very strong again as we finish up the course of the year in December and January. Mm-hmm. All right. So, any questions about our graphical look at the year? Notice here's Cupido. Here's Cupido starts off right at the cardinals. This is the cardinal axis, and this is the cardinal. Top and the bottom of the chart of the cardinal axis. See the Cupido comes down, dips in, crosses the cardinals again, pops around here, comes back out, comes down, dips in. So it's going back and forth over the cardinal axis at zero Capricorn. And like I said, it's Cupido is considered one of the better planets, but it's not considered to be a motivating planet. It has to do with the past. It's very passive, right? But it has this xenophobic streak to it because it's so tribal, right? But it rules very refined art. It rules marriage. It rules all united efforts. All right, we get out of that. And let's take a look at some closer period of time. We want to look at some of this local stuff here. Let's go to November. Let's get real close. November. And what I'm going to do, so we get nice amplification on this, will be 4 months. Oops, what happened? Is this still here? Hold on a second. Yeah, it's still here. So 4 months. Okay, and let's view that up. All right, so in our local time, right, here we are in our November period. There's the station of Mercury, right, and where's Venus here? Here's Venus. So there's our two stations that we are right now. You see the Mercury stationing with the Neptune right over here, right? And then you see that next station of Mercury in the first week of December, while Saturn is crossing the Hades, we hear news about migrants. Mm. Right? And then as we go into that first week of December, right, there's the Uranus-Neptune crossing with the node, with Mars, and the Sun. All here.
What do you think about Trump making a deal with China on the tariffs and the trade?
I think it's ephemeral. I think it's just, it's basically, I don't think he's going to be able to pull the trade off or pull the deal off. He's going to lose interest. At this point in time, Trump is going to be not very effective. If you notice during the course of this year, he's going to be dealing with a lot of legal action. And not just because the Democrats have taken over the House, but because of, and not because of Mueller,
New York,
but because of the Southern District Court of New York. Mueller was very smart. Mueller only, his charge is to produce a report. The fact that he was indicting people along the way led to the report. Whether the report gets released to the public or not has to do with the Senate, and the Senate is under Republican control. But what Mueller did that was very prescient was every time he came across something that was outside of his purview, he directed it, but he directed it into agencies that were not under the purview of the Department of Justice. So the Ninth District Court, is most of those cases are going to be tried by the Attorney General of the state. Now, there's a big thing about the Attorney General's versus Trump on the emollients case that's now wending its way through Virginia and Maryland. And they just ruled that discovery has to move forward. And what that means is all of Trump's finances are going to get displayed to the public. And whether or not he's going to hang around for that is going to be another story. My suspicion when we talked about him regarding the British astrologers and stuff that I mentioned earlier is that after the election, his time is extremely numbered. He's not going to be here that long. And more than likely, he will be forced into a resignation due to all of the cascade of legal troubles that are coming because they start attacking the family because they can't attack him. And he can't pardon his family, per se, because the crimes that they're going to be committed or accused of and whatnot, he's too close to, is the reason he really can't fire Mueller. You know, he can't pardon himself, so to speak. You know, but his pardon abilities are pretty widespread. He can pardon a lot of people. There's just certain things he can't do, and he's going to try and do them anyway. That's why there's a constitutional crisis coming. All the edicts that are coming, and the fact that they're going to get all squashed and with great pain are all going to be part and parcel with all of this. So with Trump, it's going to be death by a thousand cuts and a complete ineffectuality during the course of this year.
And so that's the Saturn-Pluto just
kind of
dancing around.
The Saturn-Pluto... takes place in January of 2020, right after Congress and everybody else comes back into session after Christmas recess. So something's going to precipitate something coming into that. It's going to cause a crisis, and it's going to force them to have to make some sort of crazy decisions by the end of January of 2020 that is then going to get revisited all through that year.
Next presidential term starts?
No.
Pardon, no. 2021.
Oh, yeah.
Right. 2021. So you get the concept here that, you know, for a long time, even if Trump leaves, we're still going to have a Saturn period over us because of Pence.
Mm-hmm.
And if both of them were to go, I don't think, and if Pelosi were the Speaker of the House, that would be very difficult. We would actually probably break. You'd probably see skirmishes breaking out in some of the rural areas, you know, literal fights. She's that vilified because, you know, you say a lie long enough and it gets to become part of the truth. You know, it's like they're still yelling about Hillary at these rallies and stuff, and the woman doesn't even hold power.
Mm.
You know, it's like honestly, if you were a Trumpet and you were yelling and screaming, she's saying, lock him up to Mueller, you know? Right. Lock Mueller up, get Rodenstein out of there. You know, that should be the chant. But they're so conservative in the classic sense that they can't even get to the present, let alone get out of the past. So it's a problem, you know? So, as far as he is concerned, I, you know, honestly, what was it? Bill Maher the other night basically said, don't talk about Trump at Thanksgiving. Right? Basically, because it is true. You're not going to change anybody's mind. And particularly in this particular era, it's not an era where people are going to get more polarized as time goes on. So what do? You go back to your tribe.
But you don't see anything about trade and what we're looking at right there.
No, not in those pictures. No, no. The overall trade combinations basically are going to be all part of that Neptune stuff. It's too rife with corruption. Or corruption is going to appear in this process. I don't think the tariffs per se are going to work as they're outlined, but are going to cause a lot of problems in trade. I think the world is going to pass us by. As I said, when you come back to that really fundamental horoscope, you know, the basic chart for the U.S., and you look, and we've got Saturn rising with Saturn setting with Hades rising and Mars and Neptune on the midheaven, basically says we are a pariah nation. Everybody looks at us as sick, and they're probably correct. You know, and nobody's going to want to partner with us. So the trade with Trump and everything else, I mean, what did China do with soybeans? They bought them from South America and Brazil. Right? The Brazilian farmers are pretty happy. Our farmers are not going to be able to make it up. Those beans are going to rot. And they still voted for Trump. So they're voting with their pocketbook, literally. That will just get worse, you know.
So,
in other words, the United States doesn't produce materials at this point that are essential to the world, right? We have unique things that we own the intellectual rights on that we control, right? Pharmaceuticals and things like this, or machineries or processes, computer things, but we're not making them.
No.
We're licensing them. So a few people will continue to make money in all of this stuff, but a vast amount of people will lose money. As I said earlier, I made light of the fact that, you know, in this town there, that they want to put a pot shop next to a liquor store, and everybody's freaking out about it. So this next, and it's next to a liquor store. I says, where else are you going to say it's next to a liquor store? But I'm more pissed off about it, not because I'm pro-pot or something. I'm pissed off about it because this town is could make a lot of money on the revenues that it's going to bring in. They projected it to be $400,000 a year minimum. And because of a couple of NIMBYs, I'm going to have to pay more taxes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I look at it. And that's the same thing that's going on here with the trade and everything else, is because somebody's trying to prove a point, we're all going to be paying taxes, higher taxes, and paying more for our goods. It's another indirect tax, because we're going to become a pariah nation. And, you know, and that's a problem. And it's business, too. People will continue to try to get into the country. Hades and Saturn are the immigrants. So this is going to be this issue isn't dead. The DACA issue isn't dead, but it should be. It should have passed a while ago. You know, Saturn is passing to Hades as we speak right now. Over the next 2 weeks, it should build up again and then become a thing. But this scares the hell out of me, because it just means that, you know, it's like, do we have to be alone? Does this have to be this stupid? It doesn't. It really doesn't. But, you know, we're not going to change those things. Congress is just going to start coming in. I think they have the right idea, where they're not going to try and go after, like, impeaching the president or something like that, because they can't. The difference between Nixon and Trump is that in Nixon's situation, half the Republicans said, yeah, this guy's a no-good asshole, and the evidence is irrefutable, we're going to have to go with it. But in this situation, they're just going to say, we don't give a shit about the evidence. We're not going to lose our position in power. We saw what happened with Nixon and what happened to the Republican Party after that. We're not going to let that happen again, you see. So the best we get is Pence when Trump resigns, because they start getting too close to his family. And this is the other thing that Mueller set up. Mueller did not set up for an indictment of Trump. He set up an indictment for Trump Jr., Jared, Ivanka. You realize the first blow, besides the discovery thing that just happened last week, was when the state attorney general of New York ruled that the family can no longer engage in any nonprofits. Mm-hmm. And they have reserved ruling on that. You realize that. That is so, again, I mean, so illegal and criminal. They were using the nonprofit as a personal piggy bank and using the electoral money as well. It's wrong all the way around. They're not prosecuting per se because of the crisis it will cause. So it's slowed down. They're just waiting. It's moving through the courts slow. But right now, the state has made the ruling. You guys can't do anything with the nonprofit. We're reserving judgment. They said that right off. So they are barred from doing anything with any nonprofits. And all their nonprofits have all been dissolved already. It's that, you know. And, you know, you wonder, you know, I remember last year I talked about news and my beliefs about news that, you know, I like to know who's paying the money for the reporter.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the tell. If they're getting paid through advertising and normal revenues, that's fine. But if they're getting funded by some think tank somewhere else, I don't want to have anything to do with it. You know, I believe in the integrity of the individual reporter. I believe that editorial staffs are absolutely necessary because somebody has to edit the materials. And all you have to do is just decide whether or not you like the editorial viewpoint. That's all. But as long as it's coming out of honest sources, that's fair. And it's a possible game. But we were talking about that last year. Well, this year it just gets worse because of the idea that it doesn't matter what the news sources report at this point in time. People have already made up whatever mind they're going to make up. They're going to have the point of view that they're going to have. They can take the president and try to indict him and cause a Supreme Court showdown and all this other stuff. They still won't care. His statement about shooting somebody on Fifth Avenue and not getting indicted for it is an extremely true thing. His base won't allow it to happen. But the rest of them should not waste their time because he's going to go on his own. Literally. It's already in play. It's just like, so he's just got to unravel because he's not going to allow his family to be attacked. But he has no choice. You see, he's already made his choices. He's already done the crimes. And the family's already done the crimes. So it's a question of, like, if you'll notice, he made a big deal, like, that he answered Mueller's questions by himself. That lets you know how much he's listening to his legal team. And what happens when you stop listening to your legal team? You know? It makes Nixon look very, very tame.
But if they wait for him to go before they start prosecuting him, then he can no longer do his, and then there's no pardoning.
Well, the deal that Nixon made with Ford, the minute Nixon resigned, Ford pardoned him. So, I mean, there is the backdoor deal, and there's no illegality about that, right? But the reason he would go, though, the reason he will go is because of the threat to family and finance, period. Because remember, this is a guy that didn't have much to begin with. His father gave him four. I thought it was $200 million. It turns out it was $400 million because he hit it all, right? And he squandered it. That's gone. Then he went to the casinos and stuff. The father had to bail him out. And he lost everything. There was a New York Times expose on his on the last tax that was out because of a lawsuit. It was like 2006. Was a tax return that came out. And basically, his only source of income was the licensing of the name and the money that he earned on The Apprentice. And that was $250 million. So Trump Towers was owned by Fred Trump put the money up for Trump Tower for the son before he passed on as a way of hiding the money, period. So yes, he owns these resources like Trump Tower, Del Mar, and all these other things, but we don't know how leveraged they are. We have no idea how much debt the family is in and stuff like that. And the fact that what would look like they had holdings was just basically pretty flimsy licensing arrangements. That all came out with the Panama holding, the Panama Hotel, where Trump was touting this as one of their jewel properties, and it turned out they had less than a licensing agreement there. They were keeping the name up illegally because the tenants had all sued to get it taken down. So this is not an empire situation. This guy has to protect his assets as much as he can, but he's not been very smart about it, and has never been very smart about anything he's ever done. You know, I mean, honestly, as a child, I grew up watching him in the New York Post, and I realized only a few months ago that he and Murdoch were really in on that one, because the New York Post was earned by Rupert Murdoch. Yeah. Murdoch made Trump, and Trump, in turn, promoted Murdoch, Fox News, and everything else. That little triumvirate. But that was when I was like 16 and 17 years old and watching this crap, you know? And then we get to the point where, you know, I got to actually know people that knew the family, and all they could talk about at the time, and he was, when he was in his 20s, was how that kid's going to screw up the family. How bad it was every time he turned up on the work site, you know, and would start ordering people around and screwing up and making almost making cranes fall over and stuff like that. And then just walk away because he got pissed at the whole thing. He's a petulant child. And we've elected a petulant child to be the president. And usually that wouldn't matter because of the retinue they bring with them. You know, Bush was not a smart guy. You know, he was the guy you wanted to go out and have a beer with and, you know, have a talk about as deep as a New York puddle on the street. You know, that was where he was at. But he brought in this retinue who was incredibly well organized. You know, I mean, I tell you, the crimes of Trump pale to the crimes of Cheney. When you really get down to it, Cheney is responsible for 600,000 deaths. Directly responsible for 600,000 deaths. All those people that died in Iraq. And not only, and then the loss of life of our own troops. Because he had a bug up his ass about getting some oil from Iraq. He really did. That's all Halliburton was all about. They wanted those oils, and they didn't get them. In the end, they didn't get them. But the worst part, though, is that Cheney never got indicted. He's got, you know, he's got accolades in his life. And his buddies are now re-recruited running the government, John Bolton and all those other characters. So, you know, Bush came in with a retinue, was very well oiled, and did very stupid, very bad things, but they did it in a way that was not challengeable. Because they were smart. And they were very scheming. This guy came in, no retinue, no help. Basically, you know, a person who's trying to make like he's a billionaire when he's probably having a hard time making payments, and starts living off of the revenue coming in for his campaign. I mean, literally. You know what brought down the nonprofit was when he made the big boast that, oh, I'm going to take all the money from tonight's meeting, right, and I'm going to give it to the vets. I'm going to give the vets $1.5 million because this is what we earned tonight. And they didn't give the vets a penny. Not a penny. And they squandered that particular money. That's what got the AG on their case. And that's what brought that case forward. That was the straw that broke the camel's back. So a lot's already been going on in this situation. As I said, the British guys all thought he would be gone in August when Saturn crossed the Cardinals. But I said, no, it's just the beginning of the end. It's Pence that's a scary guy.
Yeah.
I'd much rather have an idiot like Trump, where he's ineffectual coming in, than somebody like Pence will get together with Mitch McConnell and do some really bad things for the country.
Yeah.
And that Mitch McConnell guy is, I have no idea how he lives with himself. I mean, you know, the country went crazy over the Kavanaugh thing, and I said, all you had to do is just say two words, and it was Merrick Garland.
Yeah.
How could you say anything about attacks on Kavanaugh with what you guys did to Merrick Garland for a year?
Yeah.
You know, so, and the news didn't say anything. The news doesn't report it at all. Right? I watched how the news has gone over to the supporting the administration because they realize the writing is on the wall. These guys are in power. We have to report on what's going on. You know. Yes, and it probably is more than that.
That's
You know? But then again, that means that very bad people have been successful because none of us have any trust in the institutions. And when we grew up, the Boy Scouts and the Girl Scouts and the governments and all that other jazz, until Vietnam was sacrosanct. We came out of World War II, the victors. We were the honest people. We took care of the poor and the starving in the world. You know, but now nobody trusts any, you know, nobody trusts. Obama, you might say, was.
No, I said, now we bombed them. South Yemen.
And, and the thing with Obama, too, was that, you know, he unleashed the Pandora's box just by being who he was. You know? I mean, when you really get down to it, the Democratic Party was the KKK. And when Johnson came along and all of a sudden starts the civil rights movement, that was the boon to the Republicans, who were just basically rich patrician folks trying to, who hated Roosevelt for 40 years. You know? You know, it was it was a gift. You know, Johnson was a gift to the Republican Party because he lost the South because of that. Now it's just all the reverse. It's completely reversed itself. Remember, the GOP was the party of Lincoln. You know, they were the radical party, so to speak. The Democrats were always the KKK, the populist, the gold standard folks. You know, let's get off gold standard, get on paper money so we get cheap currency so the farmers do well. Now it's very, very different. So, and here's the most important thing of all. This is what I'm going to probably leave you guys with tonight. Is this. We'll have our drawing in a minute. Is where in, just like when Gutenberg printed the Bible and they looked in and said, "Oh, where's the Pope?" Right? Look at the Constitution today. Where are the political parties? Who anointed these two parties to be the gatekeeper for anybody who comes into office? In other words, we have a pre-government before the government. And there is nothing in our constitutional laws or anything that talks about putting that together that way. You know, we have a bicameral government with three legs, right? You know, judicial and executive and legislative branches. But where did these other branches come from? You know, and how did they get so much power? Now, when Washington left office, he warned about the partisans. That's what that was the closest they had named to political parties inside the partisans, right? Just like Eisenhower warned about the military-industrial complex. You know, it's like we gotta be careful of the partisans. Don't let partisans take over. You know, and they did right after. Immediately afterwards, the Whigs, the Know-Nothings, the Republicans, the Democrats, on and on and on. So, you know, that's another issue that at some point someone's going to have to challenge in the courts. And I don't know how that will ultimately play out in the end. Anyway, as far as this year is concerned, as I said, it's going to be a year with high inflation, money shortages going on. It's not going to be a year where we see the giant A-bombs or anything like that happening, but we're going to see a thousand cuts. We're going to see a lot of corruption. We're going to see scandals blowing out because of this. We'll see the money supply inflate and dry out. Right, and causing issues there. There'll be people that are going to make phenomenal amounts of money on very slender means. Those Powerball winners and stuff like that right now are just the populist part. People that have corporations and stuff that position themselves well will do extremely. That GM is a good example where $2.5 billion profit with no debt, whereas Ford is saddled with debt and they can't even make that kind of money. They become suspect. They become problematic. We're going to see a lot of bond problems during the course of this year with companies going belly up because of the slicing and dicing of their own derivatives and selling themselves early on and not being able to make their thing. And it's the bond market that's going to drive the stock market and everything else, and ultimately that's all driven by the value of the dollar. So we're not going to be in a stock market driven economy like we have been in some parts in the past. We're going to be in a bond driven economy with the dollar underpinning it all. Gold, by the way, at this point in time is trading extremely below water because of the strength of the dollar. You take away the strength of the dollar and gold is really accruing and rising rapidly. But every time gold starts to go up, the dollar gets stronger and gets beat down a little bit further. But you got to remember, too, gold is an old man's dream. People, they think they're going to make money when they invest in gold, but they don't understand. What is gold for? It's a hedge. The only reason you put some of your portfolio, if you have one, in gold is not for it to make money, but for it to preserve money. You use gold when everything else goes to shit. It will always have its value, you know. And it's really true that no matter what anybody says, oh, you can't eat gold, there'll always be somebody that wants to buy it. And no matter how poor everybody else is, in the Weimar Republic in Germany in 1922, when the inflation was running at 1,000% a day, you needed wheelbarrows of money just to buy an egg, right? My old teacher Hans survived on his old cigarette case for 2 years. And he had it assayed by the local jeweler downstairs for his purity. And every day he would go to the jeweler and cut a little piece off. And he'd take the market price of that day. And he bought himself food, he got himself suits, lived well. He said he even walked into a place to get a suit in his army uniform, and they wouldn't serve him because he has army uniform on, and said, you're too poor to buy anything here, get out. And he had to show them the money. And then they got embarrassed, and they sold him a suit, you know. But it's that kind of a thing. Gold will always be the last resort of survival. But it's never something that you corner in a market. It's not you buy gold at, you know, $1,000 and goes up to $3,000 and sell it. That kind of a run-up is not what you're going to really do with gold. That's not its purpose. Some people do that, but it's not the purpose. It's a hedge. The other things, too, that you should be careful about in investments in this year is stay close to your investments. Don't invest in abstract things. Kickstarter funds and things of this nature. Stay close. Micro investments. Get involved in the community. Give somebody directly that's going to need something, and they're going to, and with a clear agreement of how you're going to profit from it or be part of it. Right? That kind of a thing. Because this is a time where the minute you lose sight of the money, it's going to take wings and fly away because of inflation or because of mismanagement or because some jerk in a bank is putting it in their pocket, you know, not because of anything contrived or thought out or organized, just pettiness all over the place. So stay close to things. I always felt bad for people who had a lot of money because they had that job of, they're married to their money now. This is all they do, all they can do all day long is worry about where it's going, what's happening with it, where they're putting. And honestly, in this point in time, the best thing is you do the money yourself. You buy that business or you enfranchise the local kid to go and build his paper route, and you take your 20% of his paper route. You know, that close. Keep it very close. Keep it where you see it. Go to the guy in Wellfleet and give him money to do his aqua farm. You know, and you come down there and help him pull those oysters out of the farm. That sort of stuff. That's, you're gonna, not only will your money be a lot safer, but you'll benefit a lot more because you'll be hands-on with it. You'll get that same sense of satisfaction. Look, I could lose $1,000, I could lose $2,000, this and that. The other day, a friend of mine went to an estate sale and bought me a Wagnerware griddle, right, for $1. And I went home, I took the griddle, and I sprayed it with oven cleaners and all this other jazz, and I brought it back to life and this and that, and I looked on eBay, and they're trying to get $70 for one of these things. I felt really good about it. Not really. Yeah. And the thing is this is the way you would feel about that kind of structural investment. You know, somebody starting a business, you go in, they're happy to have you as part of it, help out, this and that. That is the best thing you can do. Otherwise, stay close to the indexes. I would go more for indexings than specific commodities per se, because it's all going to shift and change. So as broad basket indexes are the only other way I would suggest going for it, because then you'll catch whatever wave is going up on an institutional level without too much downside, right? Otherwise, it's a scary time with a lot of upside to it. Any questions about anything?
Cryptocurrency?
Cryptocurrencies, as I said, are all desperate attempts to dislodge the dollar. And should one win, it changes the world. But they're desperate attempts right now. So you can make money on the speculation with cryptocurrencies to a certain extent, but I don't think they're gonna make it in their current incarnation. And the reason is the exchanges. The exchanges themselves are too vulnerable. They keep getting ripped off left and right. They're open. No matter how you try and plug the cyber landscape, you know, you can have the proper holdings, but the exchanges are always going to be vulnerable, and that has proven time and time again. And they underplay that part. You know what I mean? They talk about more like, oh, this currency is rising, and this one's going up against this other breadbasket of currencies. And what was it? They just had the Bitcoin just dropped below 55, I think, last week, and it never went below 7. Ray, where is the Bitcoin trading at the moment? You're into that.
Yeah, it's under 6. As of yesterday, it was 55.
Yeah, and that was like radical because it hadn't dropped below 75 for a very long time. You know, so even the Bitcoin, which is one of the better closed loop currencies, no matter how you cut it, because it's got longevity, it's got history and legs, is scary shit. It's not a great place to be. And you can't buy into these things when the market is already high. You know, once it's inflated to a certain level, buying in, the only place it's going to go is down, you know? So you have to get in on this kind of a thing very early, and... I think it's already too late for pot. I think that pot, the ground floor on pot occurred a while ago. I think the only thing you can do with pot right now is on a retail post-market basis. You know, investing in somebody who's actually got the paperwork halfway through to get a retail place going. But they're going to be too many of them. They're going to burn out quick. Prices are going to crash.
Might not get supply.
Pardon?
Might not be able to get inventory.
Oh, that's the problem. It's going to be too much inventory.
You think so?
Yeah, yeah. So like, take Canada. Right now, they're in shortage for the national rollout.
Right.
Everybody's going to jump in and open up a warehouse, and all of a sudden, there's going to be glut on the market. See? Right. So this occurred in California as well, just before legalization, because they had to dump everything that wasn't tested. They were selling all the stocks out, and the price dropped to the floor. So it's a commodity market. It's right up there with soybeans and wheat. And I think that the bottom, the floor to get in, the basement, filled up a long time. You're on the second floor now, coming into that. Unless you develop, there's a couple of areas that I think are very exploitable when it comes to an emerging market like pot. One of them is in the edible area where nobody has built a tonic, so to speak. There's cures going on. Oh, get your Lorenzo oil, get your CBDs, and do this and that. But nobody's gone and put together the elements of like a Centrum Silver type of a pill, right, combined with an extremely healthy edible, combined with an infusion that's targeted to certain problems and ills, like for old folks or something like that, one that targets, say, in the morning for arthritis, and you take it in the afternoon, and it targets sleeping problems, right, that sort of thing. Nobody's doing that yet. And I think that area is wide open because that's a craft area, and it's the only, and the craft market is the only market that's going to stand out I think the rest of the market's going to become like Pabst Blue Ribbon beer really fast.
Small markets of that, starting out with a friend of mine.
Small craft markets.
Yeah, she's got like things you can take that are
here too.
Yeah, you can get chocolate and mint things,
But they have to be targeted. See, that's the whole thing. It's got to get a little bit higher up where it's targeted, combined with other things, doing a specific. This is for a sleep aid.
Right.
This is for your arthritis. This is for this. Yeah, that's right. And this is for your general get up in the morning and do a kick
pepperoni
your click your heels.
Pizza.
Yeah, pepperoni melon.
Still so unregulated too that it's ineffectual in a sense.
It's unregulated in terms of what everything does, but it's very regulated in terms of the quality that they're going to have to grow on a commercial basis. In other words, there's 19 tests in Massachusetts alone, the other states don't have, that are things like mold, the testing for mold, purity. You would expect purity and a dosage test, but the other stuff, pesticides, mold, what do they call them? Yeah, other toxins that are coming in from bugs and shit, that Massachusetts has got a really high bar for the quality of the goods that it's going to produce that are coming out, whereas a lot of the other states don't. Nevada's the worst. Nevada, you can grow it in pure chemicals and put all the mold you want in it. They don't care. It's all you pay the tax. Any other questions? Anything else? All right, what we're going to do is this. There's something that comes out of this concept of the solstice chart. By the way, just so you know, the solstice chart starts about 6 weeks before the solstice and actually ends about 3 months before the end of the year, before the next solstice, but they overlap. The next one starts early and ends late. The next one starts early, so they overlap a little bit. Now, what we're going to do is one of the things you can do with this is we can do individual readings off of the solstice chart. In other words, where your natal sun stands in this horoscope and what it's doing by progression can create a way of doing predictions that are different than doing things with a natal horoscope. As I mentioned to you guys earlier, in the old days, I would do everybody in the room. But I can't do that. I'm an old man now. But what we will do is I'm going to let you guys select three people, that will do, as everybody else leaves. So once we do the pick, the talk will be over. You guys can go out and have some more food, hang around, talk, do whatever the hell you want. But I'll sit here with the people that have been selected and we'll do a 10-15 minute reading on each one. And so you get an experience. So at least some people still get an experience of this thing, because it is unique. All right. So any other final questions?
So I have a question. Does somebody need to know what time they were born?
To do this?
Yeah.
No. We just need to know. It'd be really good if they know the time they're born, or at least within a couple of hours, so we can get the sun correct, because the sun's going to be off by a few minutes. The looser it is, the more general I have to become.
Okay.
Right? Okay.
Just quickly, you mentioned Admetos. What is the symbology of Admetos?
It's a super Saturn. So where Saturn actually rules the soil, right, with rocks in it, Admetos rules the rocks. Admetos rules the beginning and the end. Right? It is absolute standstill. The idea of something just not moving at all. It rules children with autism. You stand, they look at things that spin. It rules circulatory systems. Things that are closed loops keep going around and around. Right? Admetos is highly specialized. When it's connected to the body, it means shortness of the body, dwarfism, things like six fingers, unusual growths, when it runs with Jupiter, we're satisfied or satiated. We have enough. When it runs with Venus, we're insensitive to love, but we can only focus on one love. We can't love everybody. Only one. I mean, we're not even sure it's really love. We're just focusing on them. Otherwise, it's insensitive. When it comes with the moon, the idea of the night hours becomes really critical. We have profound thinking at nighttime, but yet you're not a very popular person. You know, that kind of thing. When it runs with Mercury, we get the idea of the focused thinking, profound thoughts. The child doesn't speak until he's 3 years old, and then does a dissertation. You know, that kind of a thing. Very focused ideas. And of course, when it runs with Saturn, it has to do with the earth, the soil, the foundation, the rock. Right? So Saturn is actually a lot more loose and liberal than Admetos is.
What about bones? Do they both?
No, Saturn is the bone structure. Admetos would be the minerals that make up the bones, but very little less, very little after that.
Thank you.
All right, so what we're going to do here is, who wants to do the selection? You want to do the selection? Good, stand up. All right, so pick one. All right. Okay, pick another one. One more. All right. Our winners are Medford.
That'd be me.
That'd be you. Number two is Patricia Dan.
She's
508-479-9672 telephone number. So she must have been the woman that left.
She did.
Yeah. Pull another one. Nobody gets left out. Marie.
That's me.
That'd be you. I get to hang around a little bit longer. And our last for the evening will be Suzanne Keating.
I'm going to hold up two other people.
You're going to hold up? You want to go first?
Oh, I don't care. It's nothing in my
mind. Well, I mean, you got to get back to me. All right, why don't we do it? We'll do Suzanne first. We'll do Medford second. Marie next. I'll have it. All right. Thank you very much for coming.
Thank you.